far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we get to review X-Men Apocalypse, TMNT2, and Deadpool.
Regarding going to Mesa, is that like out of your way to like the other places you go to, like the movie theater?
It's no big deal. I mean, it's both of them are only a few blocks from the interstate, and it's like, you know, most of the stuff would be between the two of them, so it's like doesn't really matter much one way or the other.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to be like such a hassle to go to like Tuesday night dollar theater for the handicapped kids and watch movies with them.
Yeah. I actually saw their bus at the theater today, and I was like, wow, they're really springing for some money. They must have really wanted to see a movie as soon as it came out or something. Yeah, because I went today to the, to get to the main topic of the podcast here, to the X-Men movie today at the Harkins Theater at Chandler Fashion Center. And, yeah. It was like, a decent amount of people there. I went at 10 o'clock in the morning though, so it was not too crowded or anything. I think there might have been more people at Deadpool yesterday, actually, even though it had been out for much longer than X-Men had. But the audience didn't really seem to react much to this movie compared to Deadpool, because like during Deadpool, I was hearing people cracking up the whole time. So people really seemed to be enjoying Deadpool yesterday.
See, I haven't seen Deadpool yet, so like I have no idea what's in that movie, except that like I've had my friend tell me a few things about it.
Uh-huh.
And in terms of, like, some of the comedy in it, and,
yeah.
Eventually I'm going to go see it, but, like, I just haven't done it yet, so I wouldn't have anything to say about Deadpool.
Yeah.
But, I have to say, like, I walked out of the X-Men film pretty good.
Yeah, me too. I liked it a lot.
I kind of want to say that I think it's a better movie than Captain America Civil War.
Oh, I agree. I think it was the best superhero movie of the year.
Yeah, I don't know why it's gotten so much negativity on freaking Rotten Tomatoes, because you know their credibility is solid, not.
Yeah, people are acting like it's some sort of, abomination or something, like it's way worse than Days of Future Past. I thought it was about on par with it, and it was really pretty enjoyable for me.
I don't really remember much of Days of Future Past, but I mean, I remember liking the movie, but like in terms of like...
Yeah, same here.
I think with the X-Men movies, like, every time I see one, it leaves me in a pretty good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back on them, and I'm like, okay, so X-Men Origins Wolverine was probably not a good movie. But, like, when I went and saw that, like, I really enjoyed it.
Right. Me too.
And, like, the Wolverine, I really love the Wolverine.
Like, yeah, that was a cool movie.
I thought it was a really good movie.
Yeah, I don't think there's really been one that disappointed me since X-Men 3, and that one... was like the only one that I thought was not quite up to par with the others, but even that one had some good special effects, a lot of good action in it, and it's just the plot was kind of weak, and that's the same case with Wolverine, as the first Wolverine, but it's like when you're watching them, they're pretty enjoyable, and this one, you know, it had some flaws, like, to name a little bit of nitpicking here, I didn't think that they did enough with the Psylocke character, like the costume was great, the actress was hot, and the action scenes she was in were really cool. I like the scene where she jumps on the plane and the scene where she's like going down the building with her sword and the scene where she's got the sword in front of Apocalypse when she's first introduced. But it was like she had maybe two lines of dialogue. Like when she was first introduced, she said something which I don't remember. And then later on she said something like, let's split up and fight them or something. And that was like all she said in the whole movie. And it was like, okay, can you give a little more to the character other than she's, like, a hot ninja or something?
Well, I mean, like, I know, like, when she worked for that one dude, like, in Germany or something. And
which
I
one?
Think she's just basically like a bodyguard. Like, she doesn't really have a reason to talk.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I guess maybe part of her character is, like, she just lets her sword do all the talking and then her voice.
Yeah.
But that's the way,
so.
Like, that's the way, like, you could take it.
I mean, I don't know much about that character from the comics, and I don't remember if she was ever in any of the cartoons. I've like, seen the design. Like, I have, like, an X-Men encyclopedia or something that I have from, like, the 2000s or 90s. So it's got, like, all the information about Apocalypse and Mr. Sinister and Psylocke and Jubilee and all the characters that are in this. Not to spoil something, but you said Mr. Sinister is in the post-credit scene, right? I didn't even realize that was him.
Well, I don't know if that's him, but, like, I know the Essex Corp. Like, I had to look it up online.
Because,
like, as soon as, like, me and Dory got done watching it, like, I was looking up, like, regarding what the Essex Corp was.
Yeah.
Or corporation was, and it's a corporation created by or headed by Mr. Sinister. And then that's, like, when I got to read about, like, oh, Mr. Sinister is behind, like, the Jean Grey clone that bangs Scott Summers and their kid is Cable. So I'm like, after reading that, I'm like, all right, so we have, like, a strong potential for a Cable movie to come out eventually.
Yeah, so what is the deal with Cable's origin? There's a clone involved?
As far as I can tell, like, there's some sort of clone of Jean Grey. And then Jean Grey gets it on with Scott Summers because I don't know what happened to the original Jean Grey. Because, again, I'm looking this up on Wikipedia like true comic book nerds do without having to go through all the trouble of reading 500 issues of X-Men.
Right. But, my expertise of X-Men, it goes to about like the early 80s, and after that I've not read very much. But with Jean Grey, I know that the thing where she starts, you know, shooting out fire at the end of this movie, that's from the comics where she becomes Phoenix. And then it turns out that the Phoenix was actually when Jean Grey, like, went down in some explosion in a plane in a lake or something, the lake somehow made a clone out of her, and the clone became Phoenix or something. They didn't include that. And here it's just she becomes Phoenix. And, you know, then the real her comes out of the lake 10 years later or something. It was really weird, but... Then,
I did not even know that, yeah.
Yeah, there's, like, multiple different versions of her, and she's always dying, and then it'll be like, oh, it was just a clone. And so I guess there's, like, a clone of her that died, the clone of her that became evil, you know, the clone of her that gave birth to Cable, and I think she's probably dead in the comics at the moment, but then there's, like, one version of her that traveled from the 1960s to the present. And it's like, so they have all these different versions of her, and it's really hard to keep up with. But the movies, it's comparatively, like, it takes all the good stuff about the X-Men, and it wipes out all the confusing bullshit. And it's just like a cool superhero movie that's very, I mean, I thought it was very straightforward. It doesn't try to, like, decompose the genre and, try to be all meta and try to explain the gods versus men or all that crap that Batman versus Superman threw at us. This is just, like, a cool superhero movie with Apocalypse, I guess he is a god or something, but it's not like they had Lex Luthor ranting about the difference between gods and men or anything like that for half the movie.
Yeah.
It was just,
yeah,
like, a lot of action.
Yeah, his character is, like, very simple. As, like, I am going to rule the human race, and... Because that's his, like, that's his intended goal. His actions speak that in the movie when he, like, takes all control of, like, the nuclear programs for different countries, and everyone launches their nukes in space, and they're like, okay, no one can nuke each other. All their, like, heavy disarmament has been taken away because their lighter ones isn't going to do anything to me anyways. So then, like, by taking the big heavy stuff out of the way, then, like, he's got control of the world.
When he was starting to do that, I thought he was going to have them all nuke each other and have only the strong humans survive.
Yeah,
and
that's what I thought, too.
But then he just had him shoot in the atmosphere, and I was thinking, well, wouldn't that still, like, mess up the environment, because there would be, like, poison coming down on everyone, radiation and stuff, but I guess it was high enough up that it didn't, or at least that they didn't show it really having that influence, but it could be, like, in the future movie, maybe that's caused people to mutate, and then there's new people with new powers because of the atomic bombs being shot up in the air.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens in future ones. They've obviously got some plans, because there's the scenes involving the Essex with the mutant X vial, and also the scene with Wolverine in the laboratory. Those were both some foreshadowing.
Yeah, the laboratory thing was, like, the greatest part of this. And, like, it heavily reminded me of, I want to say, like, X2 is probably my favorite X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Because I really liked it when I saw it, like, a decade ago. And, like, that one is a complete tie-in to, like, his origin of, like, the Weapon X program. And so, like, they go in there, and then you see that it's, you know, him wreaking havoc on everyone, and Stryker, like, abandons the base, and Jean Grey gives him what memories he has left, and then he just kind of runs out. Except this time he's not naked when he runs out of the damn complex. He's got, like, all that metal hardwire tied to him in, like, black boxer shorts or something.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest scenes, and I know there were some people that complained and said, why did Wolverine need to be in this? Well, I thought it was, you know...
I would have been pissed if Wolverine was not in it.
Yeah. I mean, he's been in every X-Men movie up to now. Even if in this one and in Origins, he was in it for only a brief period. But he was in this one, you know, more than he was in Origins. And
in First Class, he has a very small cameo of, like, the one when he was in the bar.
That's what I mean, First Class, yeah. And it was like he was in it for less time in that than he was in this one, and he didn't get in any fights, I don't think. He was just there drinking for a few seconds.
Yeah, and then tells him to fuck off.
Yeah.
So then, like, for the PG-13 movie, it's got its one F word.
Right, and they had that in this one, too, where Magneto said, who the fuck are you, to Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised when I heard that, but I guess they can do that just once for this kind of movie. Whereas Deadpool, it was like every other word was like fuck, because it was trying to be really edgy, like, because that's how you be a comedy these days, is include profanity every other word.
Well, plus Deadpool was a rated R movie.
Right, they can do that because it's rated R, and they can use it more often.
Yep, I don't know. Like, I really don't want to talk about I don't know if Josh has seen X-Men yet or not.
And I haven't, but it's fine. You can go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I kind of want to, like, don't want to spoil too much of it, except maybe just talk, like, the stuff that was in the movie.
Yeah, we don't have to do, like, explain every single thing that happened, just to talk about it generally, like, what things stood out to us.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool that, like, they brought back, what was it, Dr. McTaggart in it?
Moira McTaggart, yeah. For a lot of it, I thought it was like she was not really playing much of a role in the plot, but then at the end, I thought, okay, well, maybe she should have been in this movie after all, because she was, like, helping Xavier to come back to the, consciousness after he had been unconscious because of the battle with Apocalypse.
Yeah, but then, like, him and Apocalypse have that mind battle.
Right.
And then,
and it made him bald, which was cool.
Yeah, so, like, that explains where he gets his baldness from.
Yeah.
But then they also have, like, a scene where they show flashbacks of First Class when they're on the Cuban beach, and that was, like, 20 years prior.
Yeah, that stuff kind of confused me because it's been a while since I've seen First Class, but I guess basically he removed her memories, but I can't remember why he did that.
Yeah, I don't remember either because I've only seen First Class, like, once.
Right, that's the same here.
Yeah, and then yeah, because I noticed that it takes place, like, every 10 years. So, like, First Class was in 1963 because of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Josh, do you
and
remember
73
why...
was...
Why they removed the memories? Yeah, 1973 was Days of Future Past.
Yeah, and now we're in 1983. So the next one is supposed to take place in the 1990s, so that'll be 1993. So I'm actually really interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
Were you about to ask Josh? I'm sorry.
If you remembered why the memories of Moira were removed in First Class...
Wait, what?
Do you remember why the memories of Moira McTaggart were removed in X-Men First Class? Because Zionic and I had forgotten that detail, but it was a big part of this movie.
No, I don't.
Yeah, because it's been about 5 years now since that movie came out. And
I guess it has been about 5 years, yeah.
I mean, I've seen it, I saw it recently on FX, but I cannot for the life of me remember why that happened.
Because he brings them back in this one, and it's not like there are any real consequences, and he's just like, sorry, I erased your memories.
Yeah, and all of us was just like, oh, we loved each other. Like, that's it. Like,
yeah. Well, I do remember there being a love plot with her in the first movie, and so that's all I remember about it, though. I don't know if he was like, he removed the memories because he didn't want her being associated with mutants because mutants are discriminated against, or if there's some other reason.
Yeah, that might have been it. But then I also noticed that Dr. McTaggart had the outfit she had in First Class is very much like the boss in Metal Gear Solid 3, if anyone's ever played Metal Gear Solid 3.
So I think maybe he made the right choice in removing her memories, though, because the way Magneto's marriage turned out didn't end up so well. So to protect her from harm, maybe it's best to keep her at arm's length.
Well, I guess we're going to be... Because there was something else I wanted to bring up, too. The whole, like, Magneto has that, a second life, and he's, like, in the middle of, like, East Europe or whatever. And I noticed this, like, halfway through the movie, or maybe, like, a few minutes after, like, instantly, because, okay, you know, like, so, because of Age of Ultron, they had a Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch character, and Quicksilver died in Age of Ultron, and Scarlet Witch lived. So then in this movie, they never really said what her daughter's name was, or like, I guess maybe I don't know if they ever heard him say her name, but you know, like if Magneto had a son and a daughter, then the daughter was Scarlet Witch.
You got a point there.
Yeah. So then they killed her off in this movie. Because, like, and kept, you know, they keep Quicksilver with the Fox property of the movies because Disney's got the Scarlet Witch character. And that's why they killed off Quicksilver.
That's an interesting, I guess they must have made some sort of contract between the two of them that one of them could use Quicksilver in one movie and the other could use the Scarlet Witch in one movie. And they could, each one of them could use the surviving one in multiple movies as a compromise.
I guess you could say if the X-Men property ever got to Disney, they would have to fix that somehow. But then again, like, they've got both they would have both characters at that point.
If it gets to that point, they're gonna have to do some sort of big reboot and just retell it with new actors, I would think. And by the time the X-Men franchise flames out to the point that they're considering doing a big reboot, I think by that point these actors will want to move on anyway. Because I mean, as good as the Quicksilver scenes are in this, like, he does kind of the same kind of stuff in both movies, and I could see that getting tiresome for him, just like running around and pushing stuff. Like, if after he's done it for 10 years or something, and so he might want to move on. And plus, there's also always supposed to look like teenagers, or they're supposed to look young, and you're supposed to believe this guy's living in his mom's basement, and that he's like some young gamer. He's like playing Ms. Pac-Man in this, which was pretty funny. But he did it in like a serious scene where he was finding out about Magneto becoming evil again. So yeah. It was like kind of humorous that they had him playing Pac-Man just to show like what people were doing in the 80s if you were a gamer who lives with your parents. Well, like, because that archetype existed back then too.
I mean, also, like, he must have got the Pac-Man machine by stealing it from somewhere. Because like everything he owns, he wound up stealing it just because he could, because he's Quicksilver.
Yeah. And I will say, though, even though it's the same kind of thing that he did in the previous movie, they found a lot of funny things for him to do, like when he grabs the dog that's eating pizza and he is running with it, and it's that is pretty funny.
Yeah, the scene where the mansion is exploding and then he's like grabbing all the kids, and you got the one dude that's about to French kiss the girl, and he's just like, oh god, because he sees like the whole tip, the first half tip of the tongue coming out of the guy's mouth. He's like, ugh.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I gotta save this girl.
And he's like throwing people out the window, and he's like put a goldfish in someone's hands, and he's
to the Eurythmics sweet dreams.
Yeah, that was just a great scene, I thought.
Yeah, well, I noticed that like in the movie, like, you know, Scott Summers has that his brother, And then they said his name briefly, Alex. But it was in the sentence as Havoc. And I didn't know that because Dory was just like, okay, like he was in this last movie, I thought. I know he's been in stuff, and I'm like, I have no idea. I've never even seen this character before. And then they said Wreak Havoc, and then that's when he has like the beam come out of his chest, and I was like, and she's like, oh yeah, it's Havoc. And I'm like, I didn't freaking know that. I don't.
Yeah, Havoc is he's the brother of Cyclops, and he's not.
Yeah.
He doesn't appear as often as Cyclops in the X-Men stuff, but he's in there pretty, you know, often enough that he's one of the characters that's appeared in previous films. I think he was in First Class. I don't know that he was in Days of Future Past. I kind of feel like he wasn't.
It's been a while. Yeah, I don't remember him being in Days of Future Past. Like, I don't remember a character in that. And again, First Class was so long ago since I saw that.
Yeah, and they said in First Class, like, that only a few of the team survived during the, that was one of the things that was mentioned during this. They said, like, only Alex and Raven survived or something like that. And I guess Hank, but yeah, they didn't really have very many members from that team back. And I feel like the Angel was in First Class, but it was like a different Angel from this one. Is that right?
I guess so, because like I...
And there was also an Angel in X3, so they've had like three different Angels at this point.
Yeah, the Angel in X3 was like a very nice dude, and then this one, it's like he's Mr. like, listen to Billy Joel and like, you know, hardcore rock of like of 1983. And he's like, you know, getting drunk because he's like, oh man, I got my wings damaged in the Battle Royale death cage match thing with Nightcrawler.
He was fighting the Blob at first, right? And then the Nightcrawler showed up.
Oh, that was the Blob. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool how the Blob showed up for a little bit. But then the Nightcrawler, I thought he looked cool. And I love the way the Angel, they had his, you know, he had normal wings at the start, and then he had the metal wings, like in the comics.
Yeah, it's like he's like a freaking Silverhawk.
Yeah, and that's what they did in the comics when he became evil. And by the way, there must be a big increase in interest in the comics involving Apocalypse, because I saw that first appearance of Apocalypse all over the place at the Phoenix Comic Con, and it was expensive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I have that issue, and I bought it for like a dollar in maybe 2004 or so, but now people are asking for hundreds of dollars for that comic book.
Jeez.
And plus, there's also, not to gloat about my good deal to any jealous listeners here, but I got these $20 for these first appearance of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, X-Men number 4, and then X-Men number 5. At the garage sale a few weeks ago, and this guy was like, I was gonna try to trade this in at the comic book store for some credit on my new books, but I'll let you guys have it if you buy a few of them. So I bought like 50 like 90s Batman comics for under $1 each, and then he was like, all right, I'll cut you a deal on these Silver Age comics here. And he pulled them out, and he's got like this really early issues of Avengers and X-Men, and it's, you know, a really good deal. And I was able to get these really low numbers that go for hundreds or even thousands of dollars on eBay, which is just amazing how much of a bubble the comic book thing is, where people are paying that much money for a comic book.
Yeah, it's interesting because I thought like a few years ago that someone put out like some sort of article about how like the comics are becoming more worthless. And now there's also, now all of a sudden that's completely turned around in the past few years since I read that article.
Right. There's always a, you know, the people who are saying the bubble's about to burst, and they're saying like, well, look at this specific sector of the economy where prices have gone down. Look, we don't have inflation after all. But the thing is that you can say that, and then there's other examples where prices have gone up. Things are always fluctuating in a free market economy. And so it depends on what movie has just come out, and that drives interest in specific books. But there are other books that are worthless, that people bought up in the 90s that they've flooded the market with, because they thought everybody's going to think this is going to be worth $1 million, but we're going to print so many that it'll never actually be worth that much because everyone will already have a copy. And so that's what you get when you get stuff like the death of Superman. Like, everybody bought that because they thought, wow, Superman's dead. Everyone's going to want to buy this and find out how he died. Okay, well, a few months later, Superman is back alive again. And and then, turns out this isn't actually worth anything. But then 20 years later, we get Batman versus Superman comes out. Oh, Doomsday is in it. Everybody wants to buy the comic where Doomsday first appears, so they buy the Death of Superman stories. So then it goes back up again, but then some more time will pass, and people will forget about Doomsday because he was just a CGI blob, and he was a lame villain in the movie, and no one's going to remember him in a few years, and then the comic will go back down. And so it's just, each individual book is like a bubble of its own, just based on where the characters are going to be featured. And so, like, a time like this is when a comic like the first appearance of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch is going to be worth a lot because they both appeared in movies within the last couple of months. So if I wanted to sell it, I should have gotten it to CGC and took it to the con. But actually, I don't want to sell it because when you get a hold of something that rare as a comic book collector, you just want to hold on to it because if you sell it now, there's no guarantee that it's not just going to go up in value over time because dollars go down in price, you know, because they always print more. But
yeah,
there's stuff that you can hold on to and it'll generally go up in price. And when it's a character that's going to keep appearing, like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, that's not a, you know, a one-off villain like Doomsday that'll appear in one movie. Like, these characters are going to be in the next X-Men and the next Avengers, and they're gonna keep appearing, and especially with Scarlet Witch, you know, because they're removing a lot of characters after Avengers 3 from the movies, like, supposedly that's going to be the last one for Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, and there's all these characters who haven't signed on for more movies after that. There's the possibility that they're going to have to bring in a bunch of new characters, and to keep people coming, they're going to keep characters from the old movies that they can keep, so they'll keep Scarlet Witch and they'll keep Vision, and they'll probably keep the Falcon and a few others for Avengers 4. But they're going to have to bring in a bunch of new characters too, and you know, there's probably some comic that I have right now that's worth almost nothing that's going to be worth hundreds of dollars in a year or two when they bring that character into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I bought these Guardians of the Galaxy comics from the 70s, maybe 10 years ago for, you know, 50 cents in the 50 cent bins at Greg's Comics in Mesa. And he has these cheap Bronze Age comics. I can't tell you how many of those I saw at the comic convention. Another hundreds of dollars, and I bought them for under $1. And there are many comics that I've bought like that before the movie bubble blew up. And, you know, then the characters featured in a movie, and all these people who are not actually comic fans, they want to have this comic all of a sudden because, this character first appeared here, and I think that's going to continue for a while because the amount of comic book movies has gone up so much. Like, they had 4 this year. That's more than usual. But next year, I mean, Josh, do you have the schedule? It's like there's one every week of 1 month from what I recall. And in some year, it might be as far out as 2019, but there's one where they have Captain Marvel 1 week, then Shazam the next week. Then Humans and all these other things that they have scheduled, and I don't know if it's even going to make it that far, or the comic book movie bubble burst by then.
It's interesting you bring all this, regarding the value of these comic book bubbles, because I think it's best well said in the Evan Dorkin's Eltingville Club comic that he put out. And Joe basically words it as, like, you know, Dickie goes in the back and there's all these, like, backlogs of these comics. And of course, like, at the time, you know, at that time, like, at any time, like, any backlog is basically like, you know, these things are worthless. Like, why don't you just, like, get more space to, you know, and sell some of these things if they're so worthless? And he basically puts it as comic books are like unscratched lottery tickets. You just hold on to them until they're actually worth something. And that's so true to what you just said. And that works the same way with the video game market where, like, you know, over Animazement, I sold my friend my copy of Snatcher for the Sega CD. And when I bought it, it was about $100 on eBay. And right now on eBay, the game is about $550, and I think it's still going to go up from there on. And I've had that game for 8 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, currently right now, that game's sought after because, like, in terms of that being put out on the digital market. I don't. There's no way that's going to happen because, first of all, Hideo Kojima is no longer working for Konami, and majorly, second of all, Konami doesn't care anymore because they're more into the pachinko machine market. So their video game development area is kaput. They don't care anymore. So there's no way for people to play that game except for like through emulation or getting a physical copy, which is why it's such a collector's value. And like, you know, I sold the tomb for $400 and like to me, that's still getting a really good deal out of it. And that's how it is on like these video games. Like I got this stuff like, you know, about a decade ago, and from time to time, I may come across something that's rare but again, that's very uncommon for me to come by into like a flea market and find a video game that I know I can get some quick cash on. It used to be that way a decade ago, but now that everyone has caught on to that trend and knows that video games are worth money because they can just eBay everything, then like, you know, pull it up on their smartphone to figure out how much it is, then like you basically, if you want to try to find something, it's going to be at the eBay, face value, and there's no point in me like collecting any of that stuff unless I really want to play it.
Didn't you say you found it at the Play and Go or something like that? And it was
Play and Trade, and it was $5.
Yeah, real cheap. And it's like when I got my Earthbound, and it was a dime or something. Stupid hick in College Station didn't know what it was worth, and they were selling it at their garage sale because I guess probably their son moved out or something. And you know, that's the real time to strike is when some parent is trying to sell all their son's merchandise, and they're just selling it for a penny or a quarter or whatever, yeah. And they don't have a clue how to look up what things are worth, and they just assume everything is valueless because it means nothing to them, and they don't realize how much of a market there is for geek stuff like Super Nintendo games that they think, oh, this is old, no one wants to buy it, no one... You know, yeah. The common sense to an old person is who wants this game? We'll sell it for dirt cheap. Maybe we'll sell it for lucky.
The thing is, like, I need to inform my parents that, like, if anything happens to me, you know, God forbid, that, like, look, everything in my room, go on eBay and search up on how much it is. And you'll get more than enough money off of my stuff. Better yet, I'll just have my friend come down and take everything out of here. And if you guys want to keep something, whatever. Like, that's like my thing is like, you know, like if, you know, something happens, again, God forbid, like, you know, my stuff is worthless and it doesn't, like, they think like I've been I tell them my stuff is worth something, but they have to go online and actually figure out like what they can get for it and price it around that. And I've got a good number of friends that, you know, they can come in and, you know, like take what they want because they know what it's worth, or maybe selling them on my parents' behalf. I don't know. Or, you know, cause that's kind of my thing with collecting. So like, you just gotta like, you know, put in some will or something that's like, hey, if anything happens, you know, as of now, I don't have any, you know, offspring or anything that I can give it to, but like, you know, let's just like go, like, here are some people to ask. And have them price things for you, and then you know what to sell it for, because you'll get back a whole lot more than what you think they're worth. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you don't know.
Right. And that's just something to, you know, be aware of, is that, you know, if you happen to inherit some stuff, it's probably, if you don't want to end up in poverty, not a good idea to just liquidate everything in your house immediately to try to get rid of it. You know, it's probably a better idea to gradually sell it off on a site like eBay. Because that way you can actually make some money for it and not just end up living off of Social Security and barely making ends meet. You know, it's probably a better idea to, you know, be aware that people who collect stuff might not just be hoarders, but might actually be investing for the future of their loved ones or whatever in buying some of this stuff that's only going to go up in value in a lot of cases. So...
That's how I've been taking it. I mean, like, shoot, these, like, you know, the Bandai DVDs that I have of the Gundam stuff, like, those are worth a ton of money now because of scalpers, but, like, I mean, I have my Gundam 83 collection that I can get an easy $100 off or something, and then you got 8th MS Team, which is worth about $80-$100, and I bought that for less than 20 for each of those sets, like, years ago.
And the lucky thing for us with that kind of stuff is our Gundam collection is not going to go down in value as much as it would if, our sponsor writes stuff for using, you know, very much lower prices on their products. I mean, it's not unreasonable, but it's not exactly $20 for a whole series or anything like you'll sometimes see with Funimation stuff or whatever. It's
yeah, I think that was the time when, like, I think there was just a flood of, like, all this anime stuff in the market that, like, it wasn't being bought up enough. So then, like, I think people were just liquidating them. And then people online were, like, trying to match prices to, like, what they were kind of going for at the time. So that's, like, when – this is, like, the mid to end, to like, 2000s. So we're talking about 10 years ago. And, you know, like, it was, like, you know, there was – like, you can get this stuff anywhere. It was, you know, again, flood the market. And then now you look back and it's just, like, all this stuff is worth money. I mean, like – I mean, that's how it is for my Evangelion 10-set Platinum Edition. Like, I got that from somebody off eBay for, like, about $40. That sucker's worth $300 now.
Right, and I got that at the Right Stuff Christmas sale because they had so much that they were putting it on the 12 days of anime, or however many days of anime, 13 days.
Yeah.
And it's, like, one of their items that's dirt cheap that they're trying to get rid of because they've been up to that point. There was a Evangelion re-release every single year, and it would be some new box, and it would, at that point people had stopped buying the new editions because it was getting redundant. So that was the last one they put out.
ADD was flooding the market with Evangelion for, like, those period of years in the early to mid 2000s.
Right. And now it's all gone, and it's been out of print for many years now.
Yeah.
And now it's actually worth something. So even something that can seem like it's flooded at the moment can, over time, if interest stays in the franchise, you know, the value can still go up, even if there were a lot of copies printed, because there's always new people getting interested because of they saw the rebuild movies on Toonami or that sort of thing. They saw, you know, either one of the airings because they aired them at least two times, maybe three times.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and it was not something that they've done recently because they've started doing marathons instead lately, but, you know, they did air it two Decembers in a row, I think, and maybe on another holiday as well. So there's always new people coming across Ava, because that's one of the series that any new fan is told they have to see if they want to really be an anime fan. Or at least that was how it was when I was first becoming, like, aware of online internet fandom. And they were like, Ava is the number one series, and then there's the other group of people that says it's overrated, but you have to see it for yourself and decide for yourself because it's so important.
Yeah, that's how it was, like, when I first saw it, and, like, it was 2002 when I got some taste from a friend of mine in high school, and that's how I first saw it. But I first saw it when I was in Ecuador on Spanish TV at the Locomotion channel.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, it's amazing that Evangelion can still, like, you know, they make these rebuild movies to, like, refresh people on how important this is. And people, there are still fans for this show even after, again, 20 years later, which is pretty amazing.
And there's still people that are debating, like, what does the ending mean or whatever, because they keep finding ways to keep the franchise alive, but they continue the manga for so long. The manga took 20 years to come out, and then they come out with after they finished the manga, they come out with Ava 3, and then now everybody is anxiously awaiting Ava 4 for years on end, and it's like the hype is building, and it won't live up to it. We know that, but it'll be interesting to see nonetheless in 2025 or whenever it comes out.
Oh no, you lazy sumbitch.
Yeah, whenever he's done with Godzilla. Sumbitch. I wouldn't be surprised if he does Godzilla, and it does well, and he just keeps making Godzillas, and he's like, yeah, I'll get back to Ava someday, but,
you got, like, some, like, guy next employee, like, hey, like, tugging at his shirt, and he's like, I don't know, man, we've still got Evangelion fans, and they're still waiting for movie 4, and he's just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
All right, let's just go to the tea house for a weekend, and we'll crap out a script.
Or maybe he should just do a crossover movie where the Godzilla fights the Evangelion.
Yeah, just like that'd be Ava movie 4. I'll be content with it. I mean, like, even do like something like a stupid parody, and then fans can like sit there and complain about it because like that would make it essentially what Evangelion is all about.
Or they could bring in Jet Jaguar too from the 70s Godzilla movies when they had a giant robot show up in one of them. And he could fight the Ava.
Jet Jaguar.
Yeah, they could have him fight the Ava, and if they really wanted to troll the Ava fans, Ono could just have a Jaguar win and be like, this is my childhood here. This is more important than anything I ever made. And people would be, you know, outraged.
I guess getting back to X-Men talk, since we went on like a 15-minute tirade on like the collector's market for comic books and video games in Evangelion.
Yeah.
Something roughly about that time. Shoot. I guess, like, I kind of found it interesting that they got an Egyptian character for Storm.
Oh, was it actual Egyptian that did the acting for Storm?
I have no idea, but, like, it's like, I guess Storm had a background of being Egyptian, or maybe it was just part of this movie, or...
I think that's true from the comics, that she was like I might be wrong because it's been a long time since I've read them, but
she was like an Egyptian
thief in Cairo, and then Professor Xavier found her and made her become an X-Men or something like that.
Yeah.
Because it was, there was also this part, I mean, they changed the origin over time, because first they did the comics in the 70s with her, where I think she was being persecuted because she was making it rain or something like that, and because she can control the weather, and then later on they did these, in the 90s, they did something called Classic X-Men, where they would reprint the stories, and it was like much cheaper to buy those when I was getting into X-Men than it was to buy the actual old comics, and they would have a backup story in each one. And it would be like, because of they had a larger page count in the 90s than they did in the 70s, because in the 70s there was like wage and price controls, there was huge inflation because of the government's policies on economics, and so they could only put 17 pages in the comics back then, and in the 90s it was more like you could fit 22, 23, 24 pages in a comic if you wanted, and the price is more, of course, because of inflation, but they were able to put in backup stories that would like expand on the story from the 70s, and the benefit of it was, I think, that Chris Claremont was even still with Marvel, the original writer of those early X-Men stories, so he was able to expand on like what he would have put in the comic if it hadn't been for the fact that you know, the government was rationing paper and whatnot. So, you know, you get to see, like, more of each character's origin, and I think that they would even, sometimes they would incorporate stuff like Apocalypse would be there watching them in the background or something, observing what was going on with Cyclops and Havoc when they were kids, I think was when I remember, or maybe it was Mr. Sinister, but it was like, they would incorporate villains that showed up later on, and they would try to show, like, what they were doing at that point in earlier X-Men comics. And so I just thought that, you know, that's a really good way if you want to get into the backstory of some of these characters and not spend hundreds of dollars. Those X-Men classics were, you know, a much cheaper way to do that. And, you know, that's where I was exposed to a lot of these characters, like Apocalypse, and as well as in the X-Factor comics where they appeared. And I think Apocalypse is a pretty cool villain. I know a lot of people have criticized him and said he's not one of the better X-Men villains and they should have picked somebody else. But he was a part of a big crossover in the 90s, the Age of Apocalypse story. Yeah. And he was like one of the characters that they haven't used yet over these movies coming out for 15 years. So at this point for them to use someone that's this big, it's like, it's almost like, okay... Even if you don't like the character, at some point they had to do this, and he's a big character from the comics, and I thought he was, you know, he seemed really powerful in the movie, where I thought he was, like, destroying stuff with his mutant powers, and...
Yeah, I mean, he was just almost a god, if he had Charles Xavier's, like, ability to detect mutants, then, like, he would have basically been a god, because he would have controlled... both humans and mutants at the same time.
I gotta say, he almost seems like a Dragon Ball Z villain or something, where you see them like attacking him, and it's like it looks like they're doing some damage, and then he'll just suddenly he'll grab them and he'll start throwing them and beating the shit out of them, and then someone else has to step up to the fight. You know, it's like when Gohan pummels Frieza, and then there's a big cloud of dust, and it's like, did he finally get him? He was like throwing him around some, oh, but then he just heals right back up, and or Majin Buu or whatever, and he just seemed like this sort of omni-powerful villain that. It was like maybe the strongest villain that's appeared yet in an X-Men film, and maybe some people see that as too unrealistic, the way he was healing instantly. But this is a freaking
comic book movie. Like, what realism is in there?
Right. That's what I liked about this. This was unrepentantly a comic book movie, and the characters' costumes looked like they looked in the comic books. And Psylocke, they did not bend down to the social justice warriors and give her a gender neutral costume. That is a sexy costume that's designed for 90s comic book fans. And they
because
kept
she's
it,
a woman.
They kept
real
it
ex- woman.
Exactly the same, and it was glorious. And I'm, you know, I have no complaints about that costume for however much the feminists have complained.
You know, and honestly, like, I think it was very modest. Like, there wasn't, like, a ton of cleavage showing or anything. And I was like, yeah, it was a very modest costume, even though it made her look really attractive.
They didn't do like what they did in Deadpool, where the woman's costume like falls off. Like they didn't go that far with this, and it was tasteful, but it was still very, very good costume.
So is that spoiler alert?
Well, you'll see how much you get to see in that movie. It's not like you can see everything, but you know it's more than they show in this because it's R-rated.
Yeah. It was interesting about the issues you were talking about, because I've got a Cable issue 0 and issue 1. I think it's like Cable issue 1 that's like gold or something. And I got that for like under $5 like 8 or 9 years ago. So maybe when a Cable movie comes out, that'd be worth like a ton of money. I don't know.
That's another thing where it's like Apocalypse, where this is a character who was really popular in the 90s, but they never got around to including him. Maybe because they thought it'd be too complicated with all the time travel and whatnot. And I don't know if they could even do a good Cable thing because it's so complicated, but they did Days of Future Past and it worked. And so if they can do that kind of time travel story, why not Cable? They can make it work.
Or I guess like they were just like whatever's the bull crap in the Cable universe, just like, okay, it's going to have time travel, but it's not going to be as stupid as like the Cable comics, and just kind of keep it very simple.
Right. They could tone it down a little and not do the clones. That would be nice if there were no clones involved, because clones are stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been done to death in the comics, and I don't think they need to do that in the movies, too.
But John, by the time Cable comes out in theaters, what if clones are, like, the cool thing to, like, be obsessed with? Like, the zombies and Twilight, like, it, cloning. Like, that'd be the thing that, like, all the the cool kids are going to be wanting to, like, to do. So you never know.
I think that the Clone Wars thing did last pretty long, but you know, that was Star Wars. That was the only advantage it had. I guess Naruto, he's always doing clones of himself, so there are a lot of clones.
It's a jutsu move to clone himself.
Right.
And,
Shadow clone jutsu. But I don't think that they need to include clones. I just I could do without that, and I hope they don't do it in the Spider-Man movies. There's the clone saga that was in the 90s Spider-Man comics. And
it's like
at some point, people are going to say, this was a nostalgic story for me. Some director is going to say that because they read it when they were a kid. And I read it when I was a kid, too. But I don't want to go back and read it. And I don't want to see an adaptation of it. Because everything I've read about it since when I was a kid is people shitting all over it and saying, this was supposed to be a 4-issue, 6-issue story. And they stretched it out over years because it was selling well, and it ended up being a convoluted mess. And I don't think they could do it well. This issue of, like, is Peter Parker a clone for the last 20 years, or was he not, like they did in the comics? Because they could do it if they kept one Spider-Man for 20 years, like if they still had Tobey Maguire, but each 5 years there's a new Spider-Man coming out. And they're always making it a new actor, so it wouldn't really make any sense for them to make a movie like he was some established character.
Yeah.
And it's like, the new one, they're not even including an origin in it, so maybe he will be sort of established, but at the same time, he's supposed to be in high school, so He is still going to be early in his career. But that's something that will come out, I think, next year, if there aren't any delays. This is kind of the end of the comic book season for 2016 here. And
well, we got Doctor Strange coming out like the end of this year, and
right.
then
That's
wasn't
the
there
one.
Like another Thor movie coming out too?
I don't know, Josh. Do you have the schedule?
Oh no, he said Suicide Squad.
Yeah, but when is Thor 3?
Thor 3 is November of next year.
Okay, and Suicide Squad, is that November of this year?
No, it's August.
August, oh, okay.
Oh,
that's
still putting out in August, wow.
Jeez. Well, I have a feeling it'll get delayed because I heard about reshoots happening recently.
I mean, like, no, at the X-Men movie, they had a trailer for Suicide Squad.
Uh-huh. For me, I saw a trailer of Tarzan and Star Trek 3, which did not look very good. I'm not optimistic about that one, but
I don't remember I think like her and me kind of came in a little bit late, so maybe Tarzan was like the first trailer they showed. I don't even remember seeing a Tarzan trailer.
That was the one where I came in partway too, and it was like there were some apes, and there was Tarzan, and there was Jane, and it was like about what you expect for Tarzan.
Oh,
I mean it's not like I'm in any rush to see that anymore than I was in any rush to see the Jungle Book. I'll see them on their own TV or something.
I really couldn't care less about Jungle Book. And the only Tarzan movies I've seen is the one that's got the Olympic swimmer in it from like the 40s. Cause I remember like as a kid, the AMC showed like a marathon of those movies cause they made like 30 of them back in that time.
Was it the guy called Weissmuller?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. He was an Olympic swimmer at the time, or like I think he was a gold medalist. So they're like, hey, you play Tarzan. That's good enough.
These days that's on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, this was way before TCM ever existed. Like, these old movies played on AMC, when AMC played old movies.
Yeah, TCM these days is a much better channel for me, anyway. They have, like, such variety and so many old movies. I mean, compared to AMC, which airs the same shows over and over, there's much more variety on TCM.
Yeah, AMC's really rebranded because I guess they realized, like, TCM is, like, the station that's got all these classic movies on there.
And what's great
about... They seem to be more stable on, like, what they show. And they have a good variety. I mean, they show, like, Miyazaki movies on there and samurai films.
What's great about TCM also is how they have no commercial breaks.
That's true, yeah. It's, like, I guess it's sort of like a non-profit... Well, it's owned by Turner. It's a Turner broadcasting thing.
I have no
clue how they
make money.
But there's really nothing for commercials or promos. They air movies straight through.
Well, one thing I do like about Ted Turner is he seems to run channels that you would think would be totally unprofitable for a really long period of time, just seemingly out of love for old material, like Turner Classic Movies has, and to some extent Boomerang, although Boomerang has gone significantly downhill in the last year. But for a long time, Boomerang, they just aired old stuff for almost all the schedule, and they still have more of it than Cartoon Network, and there were no commercials on Boomerang until the last year when it really went downhill. It was just ads for other things on the channel, which is how TCM operates too. They have ads for, you know, they do like a TCM screening of some films. I guess they raise money that way. Where they do like they have like a little miniature documentary in front of the film about, you know, interviewing the actresses and actors from it. Like they did with the Birds and with Jaws.
Yeah.
And I think they do DVDs that they sell on the Turner Classic Movies website.
They do, yeah. But they're like, they're pretty pricey.
Yeah. But it's like, that's how you got to do it if you're going to do it without commercial breaks, I guess. And it's, and unlike PBS, I don't think they get government subsidies either. It's just an unconventional market-based means of funding, and it makes the channel much more watchable because you don't have to, you know, mute the TV half the time, you know, for commercials. Okay, Josh has some dates here in the chat.
All right,
Killing Joke. Well, that's animated, and it comes out next month.
Well, it's getting a one-night limited release in theaters.
Oh, did you post the theaters in the chat earlier? The Slack chat.
No, I think the list of theaters is coming out on the 17th.
Oh, okay.
They announced it yesterday.
Still, that could be good. They got Mark Hamill for the Joker, isn't that right? And Kevin Conroy for Batman?
Yeah.
All right, next year we got kicking it off as Wolverine 3. Oh, wait, is... okay, you know, you got... Oh, they pushed Wonder Woman to June.
Yeah,
I thought it was originally like a March movie.
I think it was, but I think they're doing reshoots because, you know, after Batman versus Superman, they have to go back. They're going back and like redoing the films that they've already.
Okay. But I mean, they're gonna have the movie of the year right here, Ghost in the Shell.
I'm gonna go see
Ghost in the Shell. Like, I don't care what the public says.
So. You're the one guy that's hyped for Ghost in the Shell.
I kind of am. I'm not obsessive. I'm not as obsessive as I was with Aeon Flux. All that movie was a piece of garbage.
Yeah,
I'm still gonna go see Ghost in the Shell. Like, I'm just like, from an anime fan's perspective, because like I've seen these live action anime adaptations and I like them.
You're one of the few people who is not outraged at the movie studio over the CGI yellow face controversy that was, you know.
Well, I never saw it, so like, how can I be outraged over something I never even looked at? And I'm not going to look at it because it doesn't matter now. So
I don't think anyone outside of the actual studio has even seen images of it. They just heard about the concept of CGI changes to faces, and they were like, okay, that's racist. We've got to boycott the movie studio now because they hate Asians, obviously, even though they're trying to make people look more Asian and they're adapting an Asian product and that Asians give their approval to the thing and they licensed it to the Americans to make it like this. But, you know.
The thing is, if they show it in Japan, people are going to go see it and probably say it's really awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I knew when I was in Japan, like, oh, crap. No, when I went there 2 years ago, like, there was one girl, like, we were talking on Twitter, and she was just telling me, like, how she, like, I think it was X-Men Origins Wolverine, and she's just like, I'm just really watching it for Hugh Jackman's butt. I'm like, you're an Asian girl, I can understand why you would really dig Hugh Jackman's butt, so that's a pass, it's okay. Sugoi Jacksonson's butthole.
Well, I bet they watched this one too because of just to see Hugh Jackman again.
Yeah, well, there might have been Days of Future. Maybe it was Days of Future Past. I don't remember.
Wolverine is one of those characters who tends to have his clothing destroyed often. You know, they say that only happens.
That's sexist against the men that don't have good butts that they want to show on the screen.
Right.
I don't care. Whatever.
They say that
it doesn't make you feel inferior. I'm just like, it makes me feel like I should really hit the gym. And there you go.
I mean, I always see people claim like this only happens to, you know, Power Girl or Supergirl or whatever for their costume to be destroyed during a fight. And do these people even read comic books or see comic book movies? Because these characters are all in great shape. They're all physically idealized. And so they picked actors that have great physiques for these films, and there's nothing wrong with that. Do you want to see a fat guy get naked as Wolverine instead of a guy that's really attractive? Even if you're not homosexual, it's like you would still prefer to see Hugh Jackman than the blob naked, you know?
But yeah.
That reminds me of how they nearly cast Danny DeVito's Logan.
Like, is that
back
true?
In the 90s when they were making the X-Men film.
Oh,
that's so wrong.
I did not even know that. In terms of 2018, a couple years, there's a date for Battle Angel Alita, July 20th. We'll see about that.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's up to whenever James Cameron finishes the next
act. I have to finish my epic long series of freaking blue people. No, you haven't even made two. The first one came out, Josh, it's been a decade. Just about since Avatar came out.
Yeah, my mom asked me about that too. Like, as I was coming back from X-Men, she was like, did they ever make Avatar 2? Like, she remembered Avatar all of a sudden for the first time in many years.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this came out almost 8 years ago. It came out 7.5 years ago or something like that. And they're just now, you know, what, a year or two away still from Avatar 2? Or what, how long is it until the next one comes out anyway, supposedly? I mean, it's been delayed so many times.
Yeah, it's just like, dude, let's just get the Battle Angel Alita movie out of the way, and then you can... So then, like, yeah. I can kind of credit you as a halfway decent director for the past 30 years. I like Aliens, James Cameron. I really do. Over Titanic. But, like, if you do Battle Angel, I'll give you a pass as one of the best directors of our time.
Josh, what are you saying?
The next Avatar is scheduled for December of 2018. That's 9 years after the first one.
Oh. Yeah, that's crazy. Jeez.
Gosh.
Yeah, I remember when that first came out, and I was in, I think I was in a sophomore year of high school, and it was like, we were talking about how we read these stories online about people who, they were so invested in the world because they saw it in 3D and the special effects were so real and the world was so idyllic, and that there were all these people who didn't want to come back to reality after it, and they kept seeing it over and over. And then that movie was in theaters for months, and it was like, at the time it was a big craze, but now everybody has moved on and it's been so long. Do they still expect to have a hit with number two?
They've announced he's announced up to like Avatar 5 or something.
Right. Because it was such a big movie that they did that thing that they do like with the Transformers movies where they announce that there's going to be like 10 more, and it's like, okay, you really think people are going to keep seeing them? Well, maybe they will, because people have kept seeing Transformers for 10 years.
Here's the difference between James Cameron and Michael Bay. Michael Bay puts out Transformers movies. James Cameron does not. James Cameron is very inconsistent. At least Michael Bay is consistent in the crap that he puts out.
Well, supposedly the reason it's been delayed so much is they want to film them all at once and then release them in a really short succession, which that seems like a bad strategy if you ask me. But I guess the sets are so expensive that they have to film it all in like a short period rather than deconstruct them one after another and make them really distinct. But if they're all like the same, you know, are people going to see 10 movies with the same setting, the same plot? Like, are people already sick of that world just from one movie? I mean, how many times can the U.S. government go to this unbespoiled planet and try to take its natural resources? Are they going to try to take one continent, one movie, and then another continent the next, and then take the North Pole one movie, and, you know, like, what are they going to do that will keep people coming back over and over?
Look, those North Poleans have been asking for it for years. We got to invade them soon. They're just, like, you look at them, you're just like, I want to invade you. Like, you just have it all over your face. Eskimo-looking North Poleans.
Maybe they'll remake the battle at the North Pole from the Dokrum series for one of the movies. One of the trailers before the film was for Independence Day 2, and one of the lines in it was, these aliens really like destroying monuments, or something like that. They really like destroying landmarks, because that's like such a cliche that they have to include a joke about it in the trailer just to show that they're sort of self-aware of the fact that it's totally cliche to destroy the Sydney Opera House like they did in this movie, or the Golden Gate Bridge like they did in X3, or any of the big destruction scenes.
John, I'm gonna go see Independence Day 2. Like, I saw that as a kid, like, about every single day at my friend's house. Like, there was a period for about maybe 2 months. Kid you not, we watched Independence Day just about every single day. Because we were like 10.
Yeah.
And to us, it was the greatest PG-13 movie of all time. And I'm going to go see Independence Day 2. It's going to be pretty garbage, but I'm still going to go see it.
Yeah, from what I can tell, it's like supposed to be the kid of the, you know, Will Smith character. Will Smith,
yeah, and then some other kid. And then Bill Pullman is, I think he's acting for the first time in like 20 years, and he just grew a beard. I wonder, holy crap, I hope that... Oh, shoot. Oh, Randy Quaid is in this, because that dude has gone off the deep hill in like 15 years, or the deep end. Like, I hope Randy Quaid has a recurring role in this movie. So I can only hope.
Yeah. And then for the other upcoming films we've got on here, do we mention Guardians 2? That'll probably do okay. The first one did well. Spider-Man, we talked about that. Thor 3. Spider-Man is July 7 next year. Thor 3 is November 3rd of next year. And then Justice League, November 17. Well, I think that one's going to get delayed because it's...
looking at it, I'm like, that's probably going to get delayed because it seems too close to Wonder Woman.
Right. And plus, the Batman vs. Superman movie got delayed. So I think that this is going to be even harder to make than that one because this is going to have even more characters. And they're going to have all these focus testing on each, each actor in it, how their suit looks. And, if the audience doesn't like it, they're going to have to change the shade of the color or whatever. I remember seeing in the documentary on the Green Lantern Blu-ray where they talked about, all the different ways they had designed the suit before they finally settled on it. And even after putting that much deliberation into it, people still complained about the suit. So people can be really particular about these things. And so the fact that they did so well in X-Men Apocalypse, I thought, was really impressive for the suit design. None of the characters' outfits looked wrong to me. Even Jubilee, who has a totally ridiculous outfit, it looks just like in the comics and in the show. So I have no complaints about the costume design for this.
Well, we got a list for 2019, and that's Captain Marvel on March 8th, Shazam April 5th, Avengers Infinity War Part 2 in May, and then June we've got Justice League Part 2. Wait, all right, here's what I'm confused about. What?
Well, I was going to ask Josh, did they cancel Inhumans? Where is it on this list?
Which I guess is a polite way of saying it's canceled, maybe.
Oh, I see on here they've got still, for 2018, they've got Black Panther in February, The Flash in March, Avengers Infinity War in May, and Ant-Man and the Wasp in July, and then Battle Angel Alita in July, and then Aquaman in late July. I think that's another one that's likely to get postponed, because it's like, I remember hearing about a Submariner movie and an Aquaman movie or TV show for like as long as I can remember. They've been talking about those kinds of things, and I think it must just be really hard to film it underwater. So I think that's going to be something they'll have a hard time with, because you notice in Batman vs. Superman, he's in it for like one shot, and it's just him moving towards the camera with the lance. But it's like they couldn't film multiple scenes with him like they did with The Flash or anything. And he was barely in it, and it was just there for, I assume, to sell merch, because I saw all these emails from Warner Brothers, which constantly spams me with emails, promoting, bobbleheads and figurines and everything of Batman versus Superman version of Aquaman. And they can still sell that stuff even if he's only in Justice League. But they don't need to do a solo Aquaman, because a lot of people consider Aquaman to be a joke, really. He's like, everyone thinks of him as being the Super Friends character who talks to fish, and they're like, "What? Would I want to see a whole movie of that?" He's not someone I want to see, and so I don't think they're going to make that movie.
I have a question, because you brought up the Captain Marvel movie. Is that in any relation to Miss Marvel?
Yes,
she's like his sister.
Well, isn't the current Captain Marvel, didn't she used to be Miss Marvel?
Oh, you know what? I was thinking of, Captain Marvel and Mary Marvel from the Shazam version of Captain Marvel, because there's two different versions of Captain Marvel coming apart about one month apart, which is just ridiculous. I assume they're going to call him Shazam instead of calling him Captain Marvel.
Yeah, because I was trying to look this up too, and I was like, I thought Captain Marvel was like a DC character also.
Yeah, and then there was it was originally Fawcett that published it, and then DC bought it, and so he used to appear on something called Wiz Comics, And then he got over to DC, and they couldn't call him Captain Marvel anymore on the cover because of Marvel putting out their own Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And they trademarked it, and so it was like what Daft is trying to do to us, where he's trying to steal our trademark just because we didn't get it registered and start calling himself that. So Marvel just started calling a character Captain Marvel, even though there was already a different character called Captain Marvel. And they stole all the trademarks and copyrights and everything for a name that had been used for 20 years previously by other publishers, and just exploiting a loophole. And so, and now DC has to call it Shazam, because that's what he says when he becomes Captain Marvel. So that's, I assume they're going to just call him Shazam in the movie as well, because I don't think they can actually call him Captain Marvel without having to do a lawsuit. Like, there was, you know, a lawsuit between DC and Marvel over this whole yeah. situation back in the day, and I think they've just decided since then to call it safe and just use the term Shazam more than Captain Marvel.
Well, Daft isn't doing anything with our podcast, so that's not even a concern, so I'm not even worried about that.
Right. But it's like what he's threatening to do, even though he's too lazy to actually put out a podcast or anything. Like, he said he was going to be doing the anime of yesteryear from now on. Like, that's what they did. They just took the name and then they used it for themselves, even though it was already being used by someone else.
Yeah, well, we'll see how long that lasts. It probably won't last, like, long, so...
Yeah, they won't even make a single episode trying to be us. Mason is just going to air our podcast next week.
Yeah. Nothing got accomplished.
Yeah.
Man, I completely forgot about X-Men. I guess there really wasn't anything else we wanted to add. I mean, other than, like, they had a scene where, like, the kids, like, Jubilee, Jean Grey, Scott Summers, and Nightcrawler go out and, like, hit the town and, like, then Jubilee comes out of, like, they come out of Return of the Jedi, and she's just like, Empire was a better movie. And I was just like, that's my girl.
Yeah, that's some blatant fanboy pandering there, because they know that that's the opinion of every Star Wars nerd.
Is Empire... Yeah, I stand by Empire.
Yeah, and they were also saying, can we agree that the third movie is always the worst one? Which was, I thought that was like a funny sort of self-deprecating thing.
Yeah, yeah.
In multiple different ways. Like, first off, to criticize the X-Men 3 movie, which was not done by Singer, because he went over to Superman Returns, and then that didn't turn out so great, and neither did X-Men 3, so it was like a big mistake overall, and they were like acknowledging that here, and then also sort of like a self-deprecating dig at this movie, which is the third one since they rebooted the X-Men franchise with First Class.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a funny line, and even if Jubilee was only in it for that one little scene, and there's like one scene where that she's taking a test with Professor Xavier, like, she's barely in it, and I think maybe she's in it after Quicksilver evacuates the building, but it's like she doesn't really do much. But at the same time, I was glad to see that character. Like, it was neat to see the costume of her, even though she didn't do anything.
Yeah, she got left behind at the like Charles Xavier school or whatever after it blew up, and I was just like, I guess you're not that important yet.
I thought at the end when they showed them all going into the danger room, which I thought was really cool because that's such an X-Men thing, them going into the danger room to train, and then I thought they were going to show her because they were like going one by one. They're like, here's Phoenix, here's Cyclops, here's the new team, we've got Mystique and all the other characters that they showed. Yeah. And I was like, okay, when are they going to show, Jubilee? And they show Storm, and who's somehow become good all of a sudden at the end. Like, she's just standing there for a lot of the battle, watching, and then after Magneto turns on, on Apocalypse, Storm turns on him about the same time, even though she doesn't really... They don't show her having, like, flashbacks like they show her with Magneto to show what's going on in his head. Because Storm, she's not really in it very much. She's kind of like Psylocke, where she's, for a lot of it, she's just there and doesn't really do much other than fight. But she's, like, she lets the Apocalypse into her apartment, which is, like, the one scene she's really in. And then he puts his hand on the TV, and he takes in all the information about the 1980s, and so he's watching, like, Ronald Reagan speeches, and he's learning about nuclear weapons. And it was like, this would be kind of like more realistic if it were happening in the present day, because back then it was analog. But at the same time, I don't even care because it's a comic book movie and it's set in the 80s, and this is something they would do in an 80s comic book.
Yeah, so it's like, kind of like he's like part Highlander. He puts his hand on the TV and he has a quickening and he's like, I know everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty silly, but at the same time, it was kind of cool. And like what he did afterwards with shooting up the nuclear weapons, I was like, okay, this is still a pretty cool villain, even if his powers are not realistic. He's still like a great comic booky kind of villain. And I thought he was probably the best villain this year of all the comic book movies. Because If you look at the villains in Batman versus Superman, you've got CGI monstrosity, Doomsday. And you've got Lex Luthor, who has got to be like the worst acted supervillain ever. And you've got then in Captain America: Civil War, you've got Baron Zemo. And we already discussed our issues with that in the Civil War movie, but it was like hard to even tell whether he was him or Bucky in some of the scenes. And there was a lot that was kind of unclear about him. Whereas This character, he's like a force of nature, like Galactus, where he's like, he's some sort of thing that's been around for thousands of years, and he has the power to destroy the planet, and he just seems like a real threat compared to the other villains, which were, you know, much smaller scale in terms of their power this year. And in Deadpool, we'll talk about that, but I didn't think the villain was as cool as Apocalypse. It was just a human, just a regular guy in Deadpool, so it's like, whatever.
Yeah, I got nothing really else to add about X-Men. I think I kind of threw out what I wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm curious on like what the next... we got the next Wolverine movie coming out, which I think is probably just going to tie in to the next X-Men movie, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, other thing I wanted to say before you got off was just about the Phoenix Comic Con. The main thing that happened there was just me noticing how high a lot of the prices had gotten on stuff that I had bought for really cheap. But, you know, then there's the issue of the lines, which when I first got there, there was this really long line to get in. And I thought, you know, maybe we'll just come back on Sunday like we usually come on Sunday. And moving really quickly, though, because we walked to the end of the line, and it was like, okay, this line loops around several times, and it's, like, going several blocks, and there's people setting up tents around here trying to get the people in the line to join the military, and trying to get people in the line to play some war video game they had at the military booth to try to, you know, sucker people in and think that, you know, war is like a game. And then they had marijuana people were there trying to get signatures to get legalized marijuana. And and it was like, no, I've already signed that. You people were at the library. And, you know, they're always trying to get my signature. And, but yeah, then there's, you know, just all sorts of stuff going on outside. And people were like, is this just a line to get in? And, since Friday is the first day, you know, there's like a preview night the night before, but Friday is the first full day, so people like that are not extreme about this stuff would just show up and they would see the line and then they would leave. Like the guy across the street said his friend drove by and then he saw the length of the line and he just decided not to even go in. But then we actually stood in line and it moved really quickly. And the secret to their moving so quickly was that the inside they had something like 8 or 9 lines and people could just split off. And so when you get inside, it's moving much quicker and it's just, you know, you show them your ID, they give you your badge, or you give them your credit card, they give you a badge, and there's no cash. It's all done with credit cards. So it's, you know, personally, I like cash, but we use my dad's credit card, but, you know, it does take longer with cash because you have to deal with giving people change and whatnot. So it was just going really quickly. And then when we got in, it was really busy. There's a lot of people in costumes as usual at these kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think the best one was Master Roshi. There was a guy with a big purple turtle backpack and a beard and a cane. And there was, like, some sunglasses on him and a Hawaiian shirt and some shorts, and he looked just like Master Roshi. And he was with, like, a early Dragon Ball Bulma where it's, you know, blue hair and a pigtail and
a pigtail on the side of the head
and a pink outfit and, you know,
yeah,
very early Dragon Ball cosplay, which I like that. And that was a really good one. And then there was a Godzilla, which was had this really long tail and like the mouth open, and he like posed for pictures with his arms out and like doing a, you know, I'm about to destroy this con kind of pose. But yeah, I thought he had a great costume. And there were a few others, but none that I remember offhand. There was a He-Man and She-Ra that was pretty good. And
that sounds awesome.
But yeah, the main costume I noticed, probably like all you know, teenage girls who think Raven is their you know, Otaku-ken reincarnation or whatever, their soul animal. Everybody is dressed as Raven. That must have been by far the most popular costume from Teen Titans. And it's, you can tell they all watch the cartoon as well, because it's like that color of cloak. And there was one that even did the, one group of girls that did the episode where they go inside of Raven's mind and there's like a bunch of different colors of Raven that represent her different personalities. Mm-hmm. And so they had like, each girl had a different colored cloak. And so there was like a red Raven, a green Raven, a purple Raven, a blue Raven, and a yellow Raven, or whatever the colors were. And that was pretty elaborate, that they would all go to the trouble of, you know, dyeing their hoods or whatever to
do all the group thing. I do have a question. Like, how many bronies were there? Did you notice any?
I did notice that there was a brony booth, but, you know, there were not many people in brony costumes.
Good.
So, yeah, that's like dying down, I think, or I hope, even though I think the show is still on, but it, you know, it's not as popular as it once was, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hub is, it was like the flagship channel of My Little Pony, and it doesn't even exist anymore. It's just a block on Discovery, so it has less airtime to breed new bronies.
Which, more power to it.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, even though I liked The Hub because of its other programming, like they had the G1 Transformers, they had the Batman the Animated Series, Batman Beyond, Superman the Animated Series.
They had, they used to have a gym on there. I got a few episodes of that in before, like, I would go to, like, college. So yeah. I got to see some old gym episodes. That was fun.
And then they had Animaniacs and Tiny Toons on there as well.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation, that was on Saturday mornings for a while. Josh and I watched all of that, which I think that'll lead into our next topic here. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 movie that Josh saw. What do you have to say about that? Didn't you say it was better than that previous movie?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, better is in relative terms, but let's see. Well, where should I start with this?
Well, actually, like, I guess you guys have the rest of it here because I haven't seen TMNT2 or Deadpool, so I was going to take off.
Okay, see you later. Okay. Yeah, do you have any closing remarks, or
do what?
Do you have any closing remarks before you leave or no?
The only thing I've been wanting to say was the fact that one of our listeners, Corey Schladowick, he was telling me, like, on Facebook Messenger about, like, maybe a week ago or so how he was at Fanime Con, and that's like probably the last time I think Bennett the Sage was doing a panel there. And he brought up on our behalf of how, like, why he did the Violence Jack review. And, like, the video that I saw had him, like, actually say my name in it. So I don't know, like, if Bennett the Sage actually, like, tracked us down on our website and found that Violence Jack review. But, like, I heard it. And, like, Corey was, like, the most pissed off person in that panel room. It was fantastic. Because he kept interrupting him.
I could not hear what he was saying, but I could hear what the guy on the stage was saying. And he was like, that anime is so hateful. You know, he seemed, like, really triggered by it. And it was just kind of funny how offended.
Just, Sage was just like, I couldn't make a joke. And then he made a thing like, well, I'm sorry if he misrepresented what I was doing. I was like, what was there to misrepresent? What, like, you thought, like, you did a good review? I was like, there's nothing there to represent. I called you out that you made a bullcrap review because it is bullcrap. And I'm like, you don't know, whatever. You don't know what you're doing. In my opinion. No, you don't. Like, what? Anyways, he's a joke. Some of the older stuff when he first started out, like, I've said this before, like, I thought it was actually pretty good. Because there were some things he got really serious on. But then he's like, oh, everything has to be a joke and creative, and I'm going to review Bubblegum Crisis and make a bad Max Headroom CGI character. Because I think it's funny. It's so bad. And I don't even know if he has the same fan base as he used to, so. But yeah, I was just want to give a shout out to Corey for standing up in our honor for our podcast and my personal review. And dislike for Bennett the Sage, so that's all I gotta say.
Did you see how many people were in the audience? Did we destroy his audience through our critical review of him?
Dude, I freaking don't know. I mean, he still has an audience because he's getting money from somewhere and from certain people.
I have a feeling he's one of those guys with a Patreon. He still feels an incentive
to make these videos, so.
I have a feeling he's one of those guys who has a Patreon account, huh?
I believe he does. Actually, yeah, I'm more than positive that he does. Because I've seen his website, and there's a link with him with a Patreon, and it's got an image of him, like, in a toga. Oh, like, geez. It's like he's trying to act, like, very, like, patriotic to, like, pay Bennett the Sage money for the stuff that he does.
Uh-huh.
Is that guy with the glasses a dead site by this point? That's what I'm thinking, because I haven't been to that website in a long time.
I don't know. I don't go there either.
Yeah, there's no point.
I mean, I think it's still around, and there's still videos coming out, but I think it's mostly, they're mostly been focusing on YouTube rather than their own website.
Yeah. It just seems like the people, I was going to say, it seems like the people that come from that site get sex changes or, I don't know, like, they just go insane when the girlfriends break up with them or.
Wait, which one of the people on that site is a transgender?
Well, I know Hope Chapman is going by Jacob Hope Chapman now.
Oh, were they from that site originally? Were they, they're Jesu Otaku, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, Jesu Otaku.
They're the one who made those ridiculous Digimon videos.
Yeah,
the Digimon videos that are like 10 hours long.
Yeah, and now she's the co-host of the ANN cast that I barely listen to now because, like, I don't know, man. Even before that whole, like, sex change thing happened, I just happened to kind of, like, there was something about Hope Chapman. Maybe it's Jacob Chapman now, or I should call, I don't know. But, like, I was just like, there's something about you I just can't stand. I can't put my finger on it, though. And it's interesting because I had this conversation with Sean Ryan from former Alpha Counter, and I told him how I felt, and he's just like, yeah, I know exactly how you feel. And he's like, that's like the same way I feel about her, too, or him now.
You can call them whatever, like, gender you want. We're not bound by the licensing agreement.
Yeah, well, in some lights, the whole licensing agreement has kind of sort of opened my eyes, like, in terms of me, like, being just a tad nicer.
Okay,
but we'll see how that goes. But
that might be kind of boring if we didn't keep attacking people like this.
Oh yeah, I wasn't. It's not gonna be. I'm trying not to attack angry lesbians when I tell them that I think Gunbuster 2 sucks on Twitter. That was a fun Sunday morning, let's just say.
Right. So if anyone missed out on this Twitter exchange, we...
I hope you did.
saw a Twitter post that Cloud had sent us by someone known as the number one Garma lesbian. And this distinguished tweeting person said that they didn't like how people considered Gurren Lagann to be a manly anime, as if this wasn't obviously a feature of Gurren Lagann, as if Kamina doesn't talk about being manly all the time. And they said, look at how Simone does this arms crossing pose that some girls do too. So look at this, proves that this is not a characteristic of only men. So stop being heteronormative and, you know, this sort of thing that you see, you know, from people who think they're being really hip by giving some sort of, you know, cultural Marxist criticism of an anime. And, And then Zionic hops in and starts criticizing Gunbuster 2.
This is what I said. I just said, Gunbuster 2 is garbage. That's true facts, Anti-Twitter. That's all I said. And then everything else, like the floodgates opened of all this shit.
they started like freaking out. They were like, how dare you as a man intrude in our conversation? We did not ask for your opinion. And then they blocked you.
No, it was the fact that they misrepresented my statement completely. They thought I was like this worst person because I'm like oppressing them because I say Gunbuster 2 is garbage.
They consider you to be mansplaining to them. Which means a male having an opinion.
Yeah. Like, it was something along those lines that, like, I just started retweeting that. I was just like, no, what I meant to say is that Gunbuster 2 is garbage. That's it.
Yeah. Well, there's this
concept. They thought it was some sort of, like, hierarchical, like, hateful speech mongering thing or whatever, and I'm like, no, I just said that Gunbuster 2 is garbage, and I was like, you took it way too seriously.
They made some tweet like, these male mecha fans, they always freak out whenever a girl tries to join their boys-only club. And then this relates also to that, the tweet where some girl, woman or whatever I should call her, that made the post where they have a picture of a man standing next to a woman, and he's, like, talking to her. And it says, mansplaining the statue. And then some Minecraft creator hopped in and replied saying, well, this is a bullshit term meant to shame men for speaking. And then they, you know, started freaking out and saying, this guy is sexist, and he doesn't understand that mansplaining is this really critical concept that we have to have in every discussion a man has. It has to be explained as being mansplaining because he's speaking through privilege. And, you know, if you just say that you don't like an anime now on Twitter, you're considered to be mansplaining because you're offering a different opinion from a woman. And, like, that's supposed to be intimidating to them or something. Like, they're triggered and they're going to have some sort of panic attack if someone disagrees with them on the internet. Like we're supposed to take this seriously and just not say anything about our opinions on any anime now because it's considered to be mansplaining if we ever have a differing opinion. I mean, it's totally ridiculous that they got so bent out of shape over this.
It's something about causing and creating drama is like the new cool thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden it's this progression over the years online. Of how, like, okay, you got your drama queens, big deal. But then, like, it's just, like, it just keeps being taken to the next level every couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse. So, really, I think what this whole experience taught me is that maybe Gunbuster 2 isn't garbage if it can just spark this debate about mansplaining. Maybe there's something more to this series I never saw before.
I remember Andy claiming that it gets better after a while because they dropped the moe stuff, but I was just so turned off by the first episode that I couldn't make
it
past
episode 2. I made
it
to episode 2, man. I was like, I saw the robot, that's all I want to see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just not good, and I'm not in any hurry to see the rest.
Maybe someday. Me either.
Okay, well, I'm going to pause for a second and get some water
And right. Then we can talk about Deadpool and Turtles.
I was going to mention how like they said it was like offensive that I kept calling it Gunbuster 2 when it should be called Diebuster.
That's right. They did say that. I don't know why.
They got really offended by that, and I just kept saying Gunbuster 2. I was like, it's Gunbuster 2. I mean, I believe it's on the DVD printing of the official one, if I recall.
They even acknowledged it was considered an alternative title. And then they said, but they shouldn't be calling it that because they don't like it. Well, what is that supposed to mean? Like, are we supposed to not call Transformers 2 Transformers 2 just because we thought it sucked? You know, that's how we still identify it as being the movie that we're talking about. Like,
yeah,
why is that?
And it's on the, it's like the second Transformer movie, so therefore it's Transformers 2. I mean, you can't really count the animated one in there.
Right.
Anyways, that's a pointless argument. So I'm going to head out so you guys can talk about TMNT and Deadpool, and I'm good. I got to go to bed. So good night, internet.
Okay. Listen. I'll be right back.
It's what you hear and listen. Later. It's what you hear and listen. X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock. Open up the door. It's real. With the nonstop pop out from stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make the mother wonder if you did it. Damn right, and I do it again. Cause yeah. I am life, so I got to win. Break bread with the enemy. No matter how many cats I break bread with, I break who you send to me. You motherfucker never wanted nothing but your life saved. That's on a life day, I'm getting down. Like it said, freeze. But won't be the one ending up on his knee. Please.
I'm back too.
Okay, cool. So, since we already talked about X-Men, which you didn't see, I guess that leaves Turtles and... did you ever comment on Civil War?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we did talk about Civil War.
Yeah, so you could talk about what you thought about Civil War and Turtles and Deadpool in this part.
All right. Well, I guess start with Deadpool, because that was first.
Were you on for Batman versus Superman, or have you not seen that?
I still haven't seen that.
You're lucky then.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to wait until that ends up on like Netflix or something.
Yeah. Best not to spend money on that film.
Yeah. I guess I'll start with Deadpool. I actually really enjoyed Deadpool.
Yeah, it was a different kind of movie, so it was a nice change of pace from some of the other films. So there were some funny moments, like when the Colossus was taking Deadpool to the mansion, and he was saying, "You're going to have a talk with the professor." And Deadpool made a comment like, "Which version? These timelines are so confusing." And it was funny that they broke the fourth wall by referring to the fact that there are different actors, and there's been a lot of fourth wall breaking in it, and they even used the term fourth wall in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is very true to the Deadpool comics, to have it be, very comedic and breaking the fourth wall a lot. Very different from the other kind of comic movies that have come out this year that were very serious, mostly.
Yeah. I also honestly think that it was probably better than most of the past few X-Men films. I mean, I can't speak for Apocalypse, obviously, but I found it much more enjoyable than, First Class and such.
I definitely thought it was better than the previous appearance of Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, God, definitely, yeah.
Was there a sort of like a veiled reference to that? Because I feel like there was at one point an action figure that looked like the previous appearance of Deadpool in the film.
I don't remember if there was. I know there was like at least one, maybe two references to Green Lantern in there.
Yeah, there were some, like, I think there was a Green Lantern sticker or something like that, and at one point he said, "Don't make my costume green."
Yeah.
So I guess Ryan Reynolds realizes that movie did not really do his career any favors, but
I guess he still manages to get superhero work if he was able to do Deadpool after it.
Well, to be fair, a large part of the reason why Deadpool was made was because of Ryan Reynolds, because he really wanted the film to be made.
Yeah. I bet they must have been really surprised by how well this movie did, because there are some references in the movie like, why would they spin off this character? They must be really desperate or something. Like, they didn't think it was going to be a big hit, that there were a lot of fans for this character or anything.
Well, I mean, it was in development hell for a long time, and they pretty much almost didn't make it when the test reel that they made got leaked online, and then they greenlit the film within 24 hours of that.
Oh, what year did that happen in?
Hold on, I can look that up.
Because this movie has been in production for something like 10 years.
Let's see.
I mean, they've been planning for it ever since the X-Men Origins Wolverine, but then eventually they just decided to, you know, reboot it and give him a different origin.
It was like the middle of 2014.
Okay. Yeah, because at one point I did think I hear that it got canceled, although maybe that was just a rumor, because, you know, obviously it ended up coming out.
Yeah, I mean, even then, the budget for this was only $58 million.
Yeah, and they made a joke in here, like, only one X-Men could be afforded on this budget when they were talking about Colossus, and then he's got his sidekick, too, I guess, but it's, like, that I don't even remember what the sidekick is called.
It was like some really long name, and the only reason that they chose her to be in the film was because her name is ridiculous.
Was that a real character from the comic books? I'd never heard of them.
Yeah, she was like from the early 2000s, and she appeared in like maybe 2-3 issues.
That's pretty bizarre that they even came up with such a character.
Yeah, Negasonic Teen.
Negasonic Teenage what?
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Warhead, oh, okay. Yeah, that was a pretty weird choice to include. But I guess since this is set in the present, it's, you know, set after the any of the X-Men movies that are in the current continuity. And so I guess there must have been some new addition to the team that had never been shown before.
Yeah, I mean, they can't really use most of the others, not just because, like, paying the actors, but also because, like, it might, you know, interfere with future films.
Right. And I guess they just wanted this to be mostly its own thing, although those two did appear in quite a bit of the movie. I thought that they wouldn't be in it as much as they were, but they were in most of the scenes set in the, I don't know, I guess you'd call it the present, because it's like the movie starts with a scene with Deadpool in the taxi, and then he gets in a fight, and then he's killing a bunch of people, and then Colossus shows up and tries to stop him, and, you know, from there on, he's in all the scenes set after that, and the only part he doesn't appear in are just the flashback scenes, and I guess the part where Deadpool goes to his apartment for a little bit, but he's in most of the action scenes in it, which was pretty cool. He, you know, him battling that woman, I don't know what her name was. The
Angel Dust.
Okay, is that also a comic book character?
Yeah.
They found some obscure ones for this.
Yeah.
I would assume that's another case where the fan service-y costume came from the comic books. Like Psylocke.
Yeah.
What comic did they originate from?
Let's see, Angel Dust was from Morlocks Issue 1.
Wow, I didn't know the Morlocks even had their own comic book.
And Negasonic Teenage Warhead was from New X-Men number 115.
Huh.
So yeah, yeah, good film. I don't really know what else to say about it. It's kind of a hard film to describe, really. It's just so off the wall.
Yeah. It's hard to really say much about it. I know Daft was wanting to be on for this, but he was saying basically that all he wanted to say was that the movie is going to inspire a bunch of different rip-offs of them trying to do comedic kind of superhero movies that are rated R, but I'm not really sure what the DC equivalent would be if they were going to try to cash in on this.
Something about them possibly doing a Lobo movie.
Oh, Lobo, yeah. I mean, they could do Ambush Bug, but I think that's not as well-known a character as Deadpool. Plus, there isn't the extreme violence aspect, which I'm sure played just as much a role of the ticket sales as the fact that it was more tongue-in-cheek. Probably a lot of people heard, oh, people get cut in half in the movie, or, you know, they wanted to see it because of that. And that's also a part of why Wolverine is so popular. And I guess, well, Lobo is the best equivalent of that for DC, because it's, you know, tongue-in-cheek, but also very violent. I know there are, like, Lobo fan films that have been made for many years that are on YouTube, but for some reason DC has never really done much with the character outside of comic books. He's in a couple episodes of Superman, the animated series, and as far as I can tell, that's his only appearance outside of comic books.
Well, they did a, like, web cartoon Lobo at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty low profile to release it only online.
Yeah.
They haven't done like a DC direct-to-video movie about Lobo, which is something I find strange considering they've made dozens of them.
And the only other appearance I can think of was that he appeared in like one episode of Young Justice.
Yeah, I guess that's right, he did. They've been, like, messing with Lobo's character lately. They tried to redesign him for New 52, and it was, you know, everybody hated it. And
Didn't they, like, make him a teenager or something?
Yeah. It was like they cut his hair, and he was, like, skinnier and not as muscular, and he just looked totally different, and it was really weird. They had the original Lobo still be appearing, and then they had this new Lobo show up, and he, like, killed the old Lobo. And then it revealed that he was really the real Lobo all along, but everybody just hated it. So I think they've probably already brought back the old Lobo by now. They probably used Rebirth as an excuse to do so. One of the many New 52 things that totally backfired, and they just had to reverse themselves on it. I have a hard time believing they'll even be able to get a Lobo movie made with the amount of movies that are already planned for superhero movies.
Like, yeah.
And plus DC's general failure to produce anything other than Batman and Superman movies.
Right. I mean, even the Superman movies, they haven't had a successful Superman film since Superman 2.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the old Superman movies, at least they managed to make four of them in pretty close succession, but Superman Returns did not do very well critically, and I don't think it did that well in the box office. And Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman, they had a decent opening, but then they had, huge drops in the box office each week. And I guess DC, if they can't even make a character that big work, they're probably just going to not even bother with someone like Lobo.
Yeah.
that's another comic that I have managed to get a hold of for very cheap, like $2 or so for the first appearance of Lobo in Omega Men, I don't know, number 4. But that's worth a lot, even though Lobo is not even in any films now. You know, when a Lobo movie inevitably comes out, it, you know, in the 2020s or whenever they would finally get around to making one, it would be, you know, probably worth even more. I bet that's going to be something that's CGC and shown at a lot of cons eventually. I'm sure Deadpool has gone up a lot too. I saw JT posted something in the chat, like New Mutants comics are skyrocketing in value because Deadpool first appeared in New Mutants number 98 or something, and that's gone up in value a lot because of the popularity of the character. That's something that they can make into a film at some point if they want to do another X-Men spinoff is New Mutants. There's a lot of source material to draw on for that, so.
Yeah.
Especially if the cast gets too old, because that was kind of what was happening in the comics, is the characters have been around for a while and they weren't teenagers anymore and they needed a new group to bring in, so they used the New Mutants instead of just bringing in another group of X-Men. And maybe they're kind of setting that up with the Apocalypse by having some of the new characters appear, like Jubilee, that are not actually on the main team. I guess they could do, you know, two different teams of X-Men or something like that.
Yeah, and they're probably going to have to do that, like, eventually, since they keep doing this 10-year time skip every film.
Yeah. There's also the thing they did in the 90s where they had X-Men and Uncanny X-Men, and they had different members on both teams, but they were both called the X-Men. But I don't know how you would indicate that in a film, or if you would just switch back and forth between two different franchises.
I feel like that would get a bit too confusing for audiences.
Probably. I mean, they're already kind of pushing it in Days of Future Past with the two different versions of Xavier and Magneto, and probably best to just keep things simpler. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do wonder how much longer they're going to do this 10-year time skip thing, because, you know, after just a couple more, they'll be caught up to the present.
And I'm not sure how they're gonna, I mean, like, isn't Xavier supposed to be Patrick Stewart 20 years after?
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of setting the stage for that with what happens to him in Apocalypse by debuting him being bald at the end, but it's, you know, he still doesn't look quite like Patrick Stewart, and ultimately they're just two different people, so it's kind of weird to just, you know, have different actors be different characters at different points in time, but you just have to suspend disbelief for that kind of stuff. But I don't think Stewart would come back if they decided to do one in 2023, or, you know, at that point it'll probably be the 2020s in real life too, and so it'll just sync up.
Well, they've said that he's going to be in Wolverine 3.
Oh, interesting.
I think that's supposed to take place in like the 2020s, 2030s.
Oh, huh. Well, Wolverine 3 is supposed to be the last act, the last appearance of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, right?
That's what he's saying at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to ever believe that stuff because they always come back, but, you know, he has been doing their role for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's very wealthy off of it. It's like at some point people like him and Downey Jr. are eventually really just going to quit doing the role because they feel like it's become played out.
Yeah, I'm pretty much expecting Robert Downey Jr. to be done after Infinity War.
Yeah, it would really be kind of ridiculous if every movie he comes in, he acts like he's about to quit and they just keep bringing him back. I mean, they've done that enough times now that it's, you know, it's not going to be credible if they have him quit in Infinity War and then come back again in the next movie. you know, it's just getting kind of ridiculous to do that over and over. Like, first it was going to be Iron Man 3 was his last one, and then Avengers 2, and then Captain America 3, and now Avengers 3, and I don't know how many times he's going to do that. But I guess they have a big enough budget that they continually are able to get him to come back, though. Since this is such a profitable franchise.
Yeah. So, Civil War. I guess we can segue into that.
Sure. Yeah, we're just already talking about the MCU, so we might as well talk about Civil War. So, what were your thoughts on Civil War?
I mean, I liked it. Let's see. I mean, everybody talks about the airport scene, so I'll just say I love the airport scene.
That was definitely the highlight of the film.
Yeah, just the way, every single character, they don't overshadow each other. I mean, everybody's used to a certain extent and not, pushed to the sidelines.
Yeah. That was the part where they revealed Giant Man as well, which was one of the cool things about the movies, introducing a new form of Ant-Man.
Yeah. Well, and you definitely got to see Spider-Man in action for the first time. That was definitely one of the better versions of Spider-Man.
They did a good job of setting up for another Spider-Man movie to come out next year. I'm sure that'll make Marvel tons of money, and introducing him here made sense.
Right.
And I like that they didn't include the ridiculous Spider-Man plot from the Civil War comic books where he reveals his secret identity, then Aunt May gets shot, and then he makes a deal with the devil to bring her back to life and changes history. That would have totally ruined the movie if they had done a literal adaptation, so I'm glad they changed it up a lot here.
Yeah. Of course that won't really work anyways, but I don't know, I would have been amused if they had gotten Andrew Garfield for that, and then, after the deal was made, then he became the new guy.
Oh, that would be pretty funny, yeah. I was surprised they didn't use, though, the Iron Spider outfit from the Civil War comic books, because that was introduced around that time, because Spider-Man had started working with Tony Stark, and he gave him a new costume that was more like the Iron Man suit, but I guess in this case, since they want to just introduce Spider-Man to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they just want it to be just the plain and simple Spider-Man, and not confuse people by making him seem like another Iron Man knockoff, like War Machine.
Yeah. Let's see.
I almost feel like War Machine, the way he was handled, was similar to Poe Dameron in Star Wars 7, where it seemed like their survival was some sort of tacked-on thing that was demanded because focus testing determined people didn't like there being deaths in films. He pretty clearly went down, and then they were like, oh, he's just crippled. He's okay. He'll survive.
Well, and I'm sure somebody complains that, oh, the black guy died.
Oh, yeah, probably. They thought it was Disney discriminating by portraying a black veteran getting injured.
I know that whole thing blows up every time that someone dies on The Walking Dead, because three out of four times it's a black guy.
Yeah, and there's always a joke about, whenever a show is doing a parody of a horror movie, they always have the black person get killed first, and then they were like, this always happens in horror movies. Why do they always kill off the black person first? Why does Hollywood value black people so little? And like that's like such a common thing to complain about whenever a black character is injured or killed. So yeah, they probably didn't want to kill him off for that reason.
Hmm. And speaking of which, I actually really liked how they handled Black Panther in this film.
Yeah, they did a good job of giving him a motivation and just introducing the character in general. The outfit looked fine, I thought, for Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And with so much else going on, he's not really the focus of the film or anything, but he'll get his own film in, I don't know, 2018, according to this list here, February 16, 2018.
Yeah, I kind of also liked how he's the sort of the straight man of the group, because like while everybody else was throwing out jokes and one-liners, he was just beating down people.
Oh yeah, he was very serious.
Yeah, I think I remember there was one point in the film where like somebody on Team Iron Man like threw out a joke and like tried to play it off with Black Panther, and then he just ignored them.
Well. Yeah, probably so.
So, yeah, overall, it was a good film. Yeah, I'm gonna ignore the whole elephant in the room about Cap and Bucky.
Oh, you're not going to go on a soliloquy like Ghost about how the Captain America and Bucky hashtag means the death of America or whatever. I noticed it when he did that rant, he even mentioned Deadpool, which surprised me, and he said that Deadpool is a hermaphrodite, which maybe that's true in the comics, but in the movie he's pretty clearly heterosexual. And, you know, he's like having sex with a woman in several scenes of the film. And there's constant penis jokes in the film too, so...
I don't know. Well, of course he doesn't read comics, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how much he knows about this stuff just because of, you know, how he pretends that he hates it, and he's always denouncing video games and comic books, but he also says that he owns a lot of comic books as an investment. So I guess that goes with our discussion earlier in the podcast about comics as an investment.
And there was that one time when he got really upset about Gabe Newell being a brony. It's like, if he really hated video games, would he really know who Gabe Newell is anyways?
Yeah, and would he always be doing the Hadouken on the trolls if he really hated video games? Like, he even acknowledged that he used to play those games at the arcade with his son, so, like, for him to pretend that he's so much better than everyone who plays video games... I mean, maybe he is better than the average gamer troll, but, you know, that doesn't really take much, and it's not like he's never played a game himself.
Alright. So, I guess we can move on to TMNT. Unless you have something else to say about Civil War?
No.
Okay. Let's see where to start with TMNT. Are you planning on seeing it? Should I?
I will, but I mean, I already watched the James and Mike video this morning where they spoil it, and I've seen, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff about it already, so it's like, I don't really care if I get spoiled on plot details. After all, it's, I mean, the whole point of seeing it is just to see a spectacle. Like, from what I heard from what they said, it was like the turtles are coming apart because of personality conflicts, as always happens in these films. And then, you know, they remember what Master Splinter said about the value of friendship and how they should work as a team since they're brothers. And then they get back together and they fight Bebop and Rocksteady, who have basically a similar origin to the cartoon where they... were humans who were mutated into animals, and then they have, you know, Krang and the Technodrome, and the way they described it, it actually sounded pretty good. So, I mean, I think I am planning to see it. Just they said it was an improvement off the last one, which is what I heard from you as well.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, let's see this. I guess to start at the beginning of the film, it opens with like a basketball game and watching from the rafters. And then if you remember in the first film, they had Vernon from the he was the cameraman from the first film.
Yeah, I remember him being in there.
Yeah, let's see. Well, in this film, it's explained that after they took down Shredder, I guess he somehow got the all the credit for it, which doesn't make sense to me because he was just a cameraman. How the hell did he take down like an Iron Man suit Shredder?
Well, so how does he take credit? Is it just like he didn't actually film the Turtles doing it, and so he just said he did it himself?
Yeah, I guess there's some agreement that they arrived at, well, that the Turtles arrived at with him, like he would take the credit in exchange for not telling anyone about them.
So he's like the Mr. Satan of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of describing it, yeah. And, let's see. So they're watching from the rafters. He's in the stadium and like has people interviewing him and cheering him on, and then they start messing with him from the rafters, like throwing like spit wads at him. And then Michelangelo accidentally drops a pizza onto the court. So, and then one of the basketball players slips over that, so they have to leave in a hurry. And like, so they leave through the sewers, and as they're going, there's a, Halloween party, so they go up on the surface, or Michelangelo like, suggests that they go up onto the surface because it's Halloween, and, but they're like, no, that's a bad idea, but he does it anyways, and starts partying with all the humans. And
wasn't there an episode of the 2003 cartoon where they were out on Halloween and people just thought they were in a costume?
Yeah. Yeah, there was something similar to that. And one of the people at the costume party that's going on in the streets is dressed up as Bumblebee from Transformers, because of course that actually got a laugh out of the audience.
Was it like the Bayformers version of Bumblebee?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like somebody driving, well, that looked like a little car driving around, and then it, like, person came out of it and went back into it and made the transforming noise.
Oh.
But so after that, the other turtles drag Michelangelo back down, and it's like, give him the whole talk about how he can't be seen by humans. They'll think we're a freak. They'll think we're freaks. And so they go back to the lair, and I guess April was like at the same time like on a investigation with that, well, investigating Baxter Stockman and getting his like information from his PDA, like, hacking into it. And they find out that the New York Police Department is doing a prisoner exchange. They're moving Shredder from from the police department to, I guess, a high security prison. But, like, I don't know why they didn't do, like, this is supposed to be, like, a year afterwards. Actually, interestingly enough, they never refer to Shredder as Orokusaki, even when they're talking about him in the context of being a prisoner. He's just always Shredder. Like, that's weird. So the prisoner exchange starts to happen. They load Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady into the back of the police truck. And the driver of the police truck is Casey Jones. So, the police vehicle drives off, and they start the whole, as they're driving along on the highway, they're suddenly surrounded by the Foot Clan, and they break out, they break into the truck and, blow up a bunch of police vehicles, but then the Turtles show up and start fighting them, and as they're just about to rescue Shredder, he jumps to a helicopter that's above the police truck, but as he's jumping, he enters a portal that just randomly appears out of nowhere. The reason the portal was there was that Baxter Stockman tries to open a portal to bring him to the their hideout, but somehow he never shows up. But when he goes through the portal, he ends up in like this giant chamber, and in front of him is Krang, and there's no build up to this. It's suddenly Krang. Krang's right there.
Yeah, they mentioned in the video, James and Mike, that they started drinking when they saw Krang, because they were saying this is something they've been waiting for 25 years, and they finally included him in a film, and they were pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of guess I understand, the way that they introduce, you said, people have been waiting, decades for this, so it's sort of like they kind of expect the audience to know who these characters are, so it's just like, here you go, here's finally the character.
Plus the Krang are in the new cartoon as well, even if they're not exactly the same as the 80s cartoon.
Right. Krang was voiced by Brad Garrett. He was supposed to be voiced by Fred Armiston, but
he got recast for some reason.
I think it was March they'd announced Fred Armiston as Krang, and then a week before the film came out, it was we couldn't get him to come into the studio because of his schedule, so we had another person voice him, Brad Garrett, who is, let's see, other roles he's done. Oh, he's mostly a voice actor, in cartoons and such. Trying to find a role that he... Let's see. Oh, well, I guess tying back into what we were talking about before, he was a Lobo in the DC Animated Universe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Is he the Krang in the Turtles cartoon or anything, or?
No, it's, so basically, the voice he gave Krang in this was kind of, sort of the 80s Krang, but more of I'd almost describe it as sort of like a pirate voice, sort of, like a twinge of, the face that they gave Krang in this kind of reminded me of, what's his name from the, Pirates of the Caribbean films?
Johnny Depp?
No, the squid-faced creature.
Oh, that thing. Yeah, I don't think I even made it through Pirates 2. Yeah, it was, I remember there being a squid guy in it, but I just couldn't get into it. But, I can't remember who his name is.
Yeah, this Krang kind of had a weird mustache, almost kind of tentacle thing on his face. But,
weird.
So, yeah, going back to the plot, he talks with Shredder, and it's we'll work out a deal. You'll prepare Earth for my arrival. We'll give you a place in my empire or something. And he explains that there's these three crystal fragments that they have to, collect to bring the Technodrome into our dimension. And, so Baxter has one, which is the one he was trying to use to get the portal to work. The other is in one of the museums in New York, and then the third one is somewhere off in Brazil, I think. Somewhere in the rainforest. So he sends Shredder back, but he gives Shredder this device, and when he returns to Earth, Shredder gives the device to Baxter, and the device, I guess, somehow Baxter immediately works out that it's like basically mutagen. It's sort of a weird form. So since they have Bebop and Rocksteady, who broke out of the prison truck and managed to make their way to like a bar where they find them, they mutate them and they become a warthog and a rhino. But this is like the weirdest version of the mutagen I've ever seen in any version of Ninja Turtles, because traditionally how the mutagen works in the 80s cartoon and the Nickelodeon cartoon was that it was the last animal that you touched you turn into, or something like that. But in this, it's the explanation is every person has animal DNA and within them, and this unlocks that animal DNA, unlocks their true self or something.
Everybody is a otaku ken or something. They're secretly a furry in their past life.
Yeah, that's, well, especially the way they describe it as their true self, it definitely feels like something a furry would say, yeah.
I hope Masked Pony never gets hit by mutagen, or he'll turn into some pony with pampers.
So let's see. Rewinding back. Let's see.
Did Baxter Stockman turn into a fly or anything?
No, he doesn't turn into a fly in this film.
Oh, bummer.
No. Let's see. So Casey ends up getting in trouble because he was the one who was driving the police truck. He gets put on suspended leave. So he decides to take up the investigation on his own, because I guess his motivation, this continuity, is that he wants to be a detective. So he ends up going to the bar that Bebop and Rocksteady were at, and the bartender had given them a cell phone that has GPS in it, so he manages to convince the bartender to give him a GPS tracker to get them, which leads him to TCRI, where Baxter works, and April, I guess she somehow ends up finding out that they're at TCRI, so she goes up to Baxter's lab, and while Bebop and Rocksteady are being mutated, she sneaks in and she manages to grab some of the mutagen and escapes. And as she's escaping, they send Foot Ninja after her, whatever they're, I don't even think they're ninjas, but whatever they are, and then Casey rescues her, and I didn't mention yet, but he is Steven Arnell from Arrow.
It's Casey Jones, that's right. I've seen clips from the film on the various CW superhero shows where they have AML talking with Megan Fox about the film, since they're both in it, and they show little clips from it, and that's been on Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, Flash. They've been airing various stuff to promote it because he's in it, the same way they promoted his brother's films when Robbie Amell was in some movies last year or the year before.
Yeah. I will say one of my disappointments about this is that he doesn't spend a whole lot of time, as much time as you would think, fighting. He only really has two fight scenes in this film, and he only wears the hockey mask for half of the first one.
That's disappointing that he doesn't wear the hockey mask more often, since that's the trademark thing.
Yeah. Let's see. So he rescues April, and then the turtles show up. He does the usual freak out about the turtles being there. So they end up taking him back to the lair. There's actually a really amusing scene in there where Casey's looking around the lair and he's remarking about stuff, and then he sees Splinter off in the back meditating, and he's like, "There's a giant rat over there." And then the turtles are like, "Oh yeah, you just have to charge at him. He'll go away." So they convinced Casey to end up charging at Splinter, and then Splinter kicks his ass.
The turtles are pretty cruel, huh?
Yeah, they're kind of dicks. So what was next that happened? So then there's the whole thing about the three three gems or crystals or whatever they're called. So Shredder sends Bebop and Rocksteady off to the museum to get the second piece. So Leonardo and Donatello go off to that, but before that, Donatello is experimenting with the mutagen, and he realizes that, oh, this mutagen can actually turn us into humans. He doesn't test on his arm, and he grows two extra fingers momentarily. So he tells Leonardo this, and Leonardo's okay, that's great and all, but keep it a secret. We're not going to go through with this idea. And then Michelangelo overhears this. He tells it to Raphael, and the two of them are the two that really want to be human, which is, especially Michelangelo, which is set up with the Halloween thing. So they end up deciding that, Raphael and Michelangelo end up deciding to break into the NYPD because they, after the whole scuffle at TCRI with April taking some of the mutagen, the police have in custody the large chunk of the mutagen. So they go try to break into the police department. Leonardo and Donatello are too late to get the second piece that Bebop and Rocksteady got, but the police end up finding out about the turtles because the Foot are sent in to the police station. Raphael and Michelangelo end up fighting them, and then the police come in, and Leonardo and Donatello come and rescue Michelangelo and Raphael, and when they're confronted by the police chief, they're all just horrified at the sight of the turtles. So, there's a whole thing about there's a thinly veiled racism message in there.
That you shouldn't fear the turtles because of their green skin or something like that.
Yeah, well, Michelangelo mentioned something about they didn't just fear us, there was actual hatred in their eyes or something like that.
That's a common theme with this sort of story. The thing in the Fantastic Four always wants to become human again. The turtles in the cartoon and the comics are always, looking for a way to reverse their mutation. But at the same time, that's one of the constant themes, so it's fine for them to include it again. I don't know that they've done that in the past movies or anything, even though that's often a concept in the cartoon.
I think there was something like that in the third Ninja Turtles film. Like, Michelangelo wanted to be human and stay behind in ancient Japan or something.
Maybe so, but I try not to remember that one too much.
Yeah. So let's see. So Casey and April, who end up helping the turtles to get away, are arrested and end up in police custody. So let's see. So the turtles, after a bit of scuffling, realize about the whole three device thing that the foot are looking for, and they track Bebop and Rocksteady down to the Brazilian rainforest, and it's like, do you remember the scene in the first film with the whole snow? Well, the whole, like, mountainside fight thing.
Yeah, where they're going down a mountain and snowboarding and all that.
Yeah, and that scene ultimately had no point to the first film other than to be trailer bait. Yeah, this was basically the same thing in this film. They go to the Brazilian rainforest. They have, like, a fight with Bebop and Rocksteady, and there's tanks and stuff involved, and then like suddenly they're heading back to New York, like nothing happened.
Oh, so who got the fragment there?
Oh, Bebop and Rocksteady did in that situation too. So they go back to New York, and they just kind of sit around in the lair for a bit, and then suddenly the Technodrome starts showing up over New York. So. Let's see, what was the...
Did the Technodrome look good?
I mean, yeah, well, at first when it shows up, it's just like by piece, it comes through the portal reassembling itself, and we, I don't think you actually see the full thing, because they managed to stop the portal in time before it completely assembles itself, but the eye stalk thing from the old Technodrome is there. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, they seem to be doing a lot to appeal to older fans with this film by featuring the Technodrome and all these other old characters.
Yeah. Let's see. What else was there? So, kind of ignoring... There is, like, this weird subplot with Burn. Like, he gets Casey and April out of jail. That's like, it's a whole kind of unnecessary plot line, but eventually Casey and April managed to get the police to, you know, meet them in like an alleyway, and then the turtles come up, and it's actually kind of cool seeing they kind of have like a back and forth for a bit, and then the turtles actually take over the start leading the police force, like giving them orders and such to help them take down the Technodrome. They find out that the Technodrome has like this toxic atmosphere around it that's poison to any life form with like a human type breathing system, but since the turtles don't have that, they're the only ones who can stop it. So they manage to get into the Technodrome, and there's a fight with Krang. He has like sort of something resembling the old Krang android body. It's not exactly there's no fight with Shredder in this film. I don't think he actually even sees the turtles.
That's unusual.
Yeah, he ends up getting flash frozen by Krang, like, just before the fight with the turtles, like, and Krang puts him in, like, some kind of, storage chamber, which I'm hoping that I can get like a high resolution screenshot of that, because I'm imagining that some of the other chambers in there had like other Ninja Turtle characters. Like, I heard somebody mention there might have been Triceraton in one of those.
Oh, so that was them setting up future films there by showing cameos?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a fight with Krang, and then Krang's defeated, and actually at the same time there was a fight between with Casey against Bebop and Rocksteady. It was kind of... It felt like a fight that they were trying to, like, hype up more than they should. I mean, it was definitely a cool fight between Casey, Bebop, and Rocksteady, but it was like... There was that, the fight with the Turtles and Krang, and there was also April and Vern, like, trying to stop the portal device and fighting Karai. Yeah, Karai was in there, just like briefly and
wow.
No consequence. And it was like out of the three, even though Casey against Bebop and Rocksteady was cool and all, it felt like the least important thing because he was just acting as a distraction while Vern and April went after the portal. So,
but, it must have been just to hype the new characters.
Yeah. And, thankfully Bebop and Rocksteady weren't killed. They were just, they end up in a, container. It's like a, shipping container. There's a bomb that goes off in there. But then, like, sort of like how, like, in some, like, anime edited dubs, they had like the whole like groaning thing when somebody's obviously been killed. Here you have like the bomb goes off, there's a brief silence, and then Bebop and Rocksteady have like a brief like joking exchange. So
they make it pretty clear that they survived by adding some jokes in.
Lead a few Krang, the portals shut off, the Technodrome, like, gets sucked back into the portal, Krang gives off this whole, like, I'll be back next time type talk, and then, at the end of the film, the Turtles are awarded medals by the police department, they do the ceremony at night on Ellis Island, and there's this agreement that, they will help police, like, in future events like this, but on the condition that they don't tell anybody, like, tell the public about the Turtles. And then the film ends there.
So you think they're going to make Turtles 3? Has that been announced yet, or...?
It hasn't been announced, and this is definitely longer than it took for the first... for this film to get announced after the first one came out, but I think it probably would probably try to get one more out of this. I mean, it's only made back half of its budget, not counting like advertising, but I think like the first film did really well overseas, so this will probably do well as well.
This hasn't come out in China or Japan yet, though, right?
Right. Let's see if I can find those release dates.
I know that the Transformers films are pretty big in Asia, so I would figure the Turtles films are, too.
Yeah. So, it's coming out. There's actually quite a few countries that don't have it yet. China's not getting it until July 2nd, and then Japan's not getting it until August 26th.
Japan seems to get films to last. They recently got Deadpool, right?
Yeah, they just got Deadpool, like, within, like, the past week and a half. And they're not getting X-Men Apocalypse until, like, August.
Yeah, well, maybe they... produce some quality Japanese dubs for them. I don't know, but hopefully, I don't know. I don't know if it wanted it to make money or not. When the first one came out, I kind of didn't want them to make more so that they wouldn't keep making, you know, these CGI monstrosities, because I was just so turned off by the character designs. But yeah, then I saw it, and it was not as bad as I was expecting. I don't know if I'd call it good or not. Probably not. But this one actually seems like it's even an improvement over the first one, which is rare for a sequel. But I like that all the different things they've included that are supposed to appeal to the old fans that like all of the characters from the 80s show. And it just seems like they cared more about the fans this time than usual for this sort of film.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that this film was an improvement over the first. And like I said in the chat, I would rank it about probably on par with the 2007 CGI film. And it's kind of sort of the same, that it's definitely got a lot of, good action scenes and, fan service, but it's also at the same time there's kind of some missed opportunities.
Yeah, I know that with the 2007 film, I watched some of the special features when I watched it on DVD recently, and it was like they mentioned that there were a lot of things involving April and Casey that they didn't get to do that they wanted to do because of the film ultimately having to focus on the turtles. So, I mean, I feel like even though Casey's in this, it'll probably be something similar to that, where he's really not the main focus of it, and he has only just like a kind of a subplot. And
yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like he was kind of shoved in there because we got to get Casey Jones in there. But
yeah.
If they make another film, he'll hopefully have a bigger role.
Well, I'm sure I'll have a hard time adjusting while watching it just because of how much I associate that actor with Green Arrow.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, it's about a option.
Okay, well, I guess we reviewed all the stuff we were going to cover, so we can move on to closing remarks at this point, if you want.
So, should we acknowledge the agreement thing that's...
Oh, yeah, I mean, we did make some sort of veiled references to the Toon Radio agreements during the part where Zionic was on, but... I doubt anyone is listening to this on Toon Radio, but if anybody downloads it on the blog and is curious what's going on with Toon Radio, which we often mention as being our distributor, and airs our program on Thursday nights at 10 p.m., this radio station has been down for several months, and it's finally going to supposedly return sometime this week. At first he said it was going to be Monday, and then he said tomorrow, and then Tuesday went and passed, and then he said, oh, well, it'll be up on Wednesday. It was not up on Wednesday. And then he said, oh, well, it'll be up tomorrow on Thursday. It's not up on Thursday, as far as I can tell. It wasn't the last time I checked. But in spite of the fact that he received a $130 donation from Daft, Viku, and TY, who all pulled $45 each to spend trying to get this radio station that's a complete failure and has been for 15 years back online. And their intention in doing this was to... just to screw with us, really, to ask Mason to remove our program if we didn't meet a series of ludicrous demands, including that we include a parental advisory warning before each episode, which, note that we did not give a parental advisory warning before this episode, and that we were supposed to include a female host on every episode, which did not happen. And
CG on, so.
Yeah, and they wanted us to get CG on to voice DJ Toon in every episode for DJ Toon Says comment. And that could be amusing, I won't deny that, but I don't think we're going to have CG on every week because he tends to get paranoid if we record him, so.
I mean, I could probably just do my CG impression, which I haven't done in a while.
That's true. You could do CG instead. I don't know what exactly they wanted for that segment. They're saying it would be similar to the Sonic Says segment in the old cartoons, but I'm sure CGs would just be like, use a condom during gay sex or something like that. Which I don't know if DJ Toon would really be saying something like that.
Jeez. So yeah, I guess one thing I will say about this is that I kind of think the idea of the quote-unquote programming block might be interesting. I'm not sure exactly what they have in mind. I mean, I could probably throw together like a half-hour thing every week, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they really wanted there. They were saying, as one of their conditions, that Zionic needs to be reduced to only one-third of the speaking on the podcast.
And, how do you measure that?
Yeah, I don't know. They said they liked the idea of including that just because of they wanted to like force Zionic to look over each episode and have like a stopwatch to like turn it on and off each time I spoke, each time he spoke, each time you spoke, and make sure that all the time is exactly equal. But obviously that's not going to happen, and it's like a ridiculous concept. And they thought that we were going to just tick off a few of these conditions that we thought were unreasonable, and then they thought that we were going to put a few conditions of our own and just endlessly negotiate on this ridiculous thing. But, of course, at the end of the call, Zionic and I just completely rejected their, control over this block. And Mason on the chat yesterday, he was sort of confused, as he often is. And he put out a press release that described the so-called investors, Viku and TY and Daft as being the new hosts of Anime of the Yesteryear, and they were going to control the Thursday night block. And then we told Mason, well, actually, we still control Anime of Yesteryear, and that's not their podcast. And Mason said something like, you should fogire this stiff out, or something to that effect. Usual Masonism, where he misspelled every word in the sentence. And then he IM'd Zionic privately and said that Daft and TY and Viku were pretending to be the Anime of Yesteryear podcast and doing it on behalf of us in these various contracts. And even though I don't think that's actually true, going by the contracts they read to us, it is funny that Mason interpreted it that way and is going to continue to allow us to control the Thursday night block as far as I can tell. So, I'm sure he realizes that those guys are too trollish to be trusted with controlling a part of his station, and that they would just run it into the ground by airing stuff like Notaku Diaries, which gets zero ratings. At least we get one or two ratings sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I was amused by the suggestion that the block include True Capitalist Radio.
Oh, yeah. I think that was my idea, and I mentioned that to Daft, and then Daft actually wrote it into the contract, which was the case for quite a few of the things in the contract. I was like trying to guess what is in the contract because he wouldn't tell me what was in it. And he was like, no, but that's a good idea. I'm going to include that. And so it kept getting longer and longer. And he included all these things like, I think True Conservative Radio was in there too, the really early episodes of Ghost.
Yeah.
And I've heard some clips from that, and he actually tends to get even angrier on that one than on the new one, even though in general he's calmer, but when he... when he gets angry on that one, he gets really angry, and it doesn't sound as fake.
Like, the other week I was listening to an old clip from True Conservative Radio, and it was like, he was raging about Beyonce, but he got, like, so mad at that he collapsed on the floor and nearly had a heart attack.
Yeah, there's one where he talks about healthcare that I remember listening to, like, 4 or 5 years ago. And he just got so angry, and sometimes he'll even still go on a rant about healthcare just in the middle of an episode. Like, I remember listening to the episode where Cruz and Kasich had just dropped out, and I wanted to see how happy he was. And like, he was celebrating at first, and he was talking about how great it was for Trump to be victorious. And then all of a sudden, he starts ranting about the healthcare industry and how he doesn't believe in... medicine, and he thinks that instead people should just have salt. And he says that the Japanese are the healthiest people on earth because they have a lot of salt on their fish. And he was like going on and on about, you know, all his ridiculous views on dieting, and like he's just really gone off the deep end while he was off the air. And he's always talking about how he went from hotel to hotel while he was off the air, and there was the government was spying on him in an ice cream van outside of his hotel. Like, we're supposed to believe that. Or maybe they are watching him because he is always being used on these splices that they use to call up the 911 and the FBI. Like, I listened to the El Foxo Loco that he uploaded this morning from a couple days ago, and they called up the FBI and said something about, like, Operation Barrel Roll. It involves killing 1 million people, including the president, the vice president, and everyone in the Congress. And then the guy was like, can you tell me your phone number, please? And he says, Ghost from True Capitalist Radio, or Politics Ghost on Twitter, or something like that. I bet that They do have to look into this kind of stuff, just even if it seems like a prank call, because, you know, that's like their job to do that. So, I mean, poor Ghost is probably under investigation because of the trolls or something.
Yeah.
This is the same video where he also calls up a couple of stores in New York and says that he intends to go in there cross-dressing, and asked if it was okay if he still had his beard. And the clerks were just like, yes, that's fine. And then Ghost, he gets really angry each time. He's like, this is America. God damn it. And he did that previously with, I think, a Target in North Carolina. I don't know where he gets these numbers and why he's wasting these businesses' time with prank calls. But, I mean, if somebody did that to his brick-and-mortar store, I'm sure he would be furious if the trolls started calling him and making jokes about transgenders. But it's okay for him to do it. I mean, he's a total hypocrite.
Yeah.
He also called back one of the trolls, I noticed, because the troll made a splice of him talking about it was like some sick, disgusting, despicable splice about him watching 8-year-olds fucking 10-year-olds or something like that. And then he kept calling them back over and over, and he would be like, oh, they hung up. Because I guess they didn't want to talk to Ghost after playing their little splice.
Oh, yeah. I think yesterday's Radio Graffiti there or something, there was somebody that called up, or maybe it was the day before, somebody called up, played a splice, and he tried to call them back, and then, like, at the end of the show, he was like, if that was you, Masked Pony, I'm gonna kick your ass or something.
Yeah, that was the same call that I was thinking of. Yeah, he did say that, don't we know that area code? Isn't that you, Masked Pony, gunk damn it, and you're trolling, son of a bitch? And he was like, now he's got Masked Pony as his main nemesis, just because it's some retard with a diaper fetish that loves ponies. Like, I find it hilarious how he seems to be, like, he feels personally betrayed by Masked Pony, and he's so angry on the show the last few days, even more than he was from the Vietnam calls, just because of some idiot turned out to have a pony's diaper fetish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardly the first time one of his callers had a sick fetish or was a brony. I mean, for him to get this angry over is kind of ridiculous, but I guess he actually liked Masked Pony for some reason or another. Maybe he just felt sorry for him, I don't know.
Probably. Well, now you have the trolls trying to, like, get dirt on Teutonic Plague because they're all tired of him.
Yeah. Have they found anything?
No, I don't think so. I think somebody accused him of being a pedophile, but I don't think they've seen anything concrete about that.
And I heard that, I don't know if it's true or not, but the Ghost was accusing him of having a picture of him in diapers, and then Masked Pony was, like, denying that it was true, but I don't even want to look it up to see if it's true or not. I would assume it is, going by the stuff that he supposedly wrote.
I think I might have stumbled across something like that, but yeah, it's best not to. I'm already kind of scarred over him. I don't know if you remember, but Pamper Chew.
Which one was that?
That was the guy with the I think he had an avatar like Pikachu, but like in a diaper.
Was this on Toon Zone?
No, I think this was actually, like, an LOL cow that, 789chan went after.
Oh. Well, I remember there was a guy on Toon Zone called Son Manic or something like that. And he had this plan that he was going to send to Sega to make a Sonic movie, and then eventually they found pictures of him in diapers.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, that guy's kind of got, like, a rather large record. I think he was Encyclopedia Dramatica page. Like, I guess he got to his whole obsession with making a Sonic movie got to the point where someone from Sega actually contacted him telling him to stop.
Yeah, I remember that. Sometimes he would act like Sega had actually approved it. And I think it would probably just be like when Sega sends letters to Chris Chan or what he thinks is Sega. And it turns out it's just some troll using a fake email account and he actually falls for it.
Yeah.
But that guy does have an ED page. I remember seeing it and it was really gross.
Yeah. But like, I seem to recall the reason they went after him, like, I think he was contacting, like, actual news websites claiming that his movie had been approved by Sega.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember him being on Toon Zone, like, really early on, before he got really infamous, and it would just be like, he was treated the same way Tim Box was treated, where he would just post these long threads explaining about his fantasy movie, and people would say, he's already posted this on other websites, and he's just making this up, this isn't a real movie. The same way people would say, oh, Tim Box has already done all this on the original trilogy board when he was on Toon Zone the first time. So he just seemed like another Tim Box knockoff, but I think he's probably more well-known on, these trolling boards than Tim Box is.
Probably.
Even though Tim Box does tend to get, you know, messages from trolls, and he doesn't post as often on Facebook anymore because of that.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry about that, because he ended up getting a lot of flack over that one guy who was posting on 4chan under his name.
Yeah, and there was the whole issue of people thought these videos that weren't made by him were made by him.
Yeah.
And it was like Nickelodeon mashup videos or something where it was like one of those stupid, like, crossover movies where they took a bunch of random clips of shows and tried to make it like they're interacting, and like those are some really horrible things. And I remember seeing, like, Daft and I found a whole wiki just explaining all those different, you know, Land Before Time remixes, and
wasn't that, I think, like some fan fiction wiki?
Yeah, maybe so. But it was like they're like, they make whole videos of them on YouTube, like feature length movies, and it's like, it's some of the most autistic stuff I've ever seen, where they've got like every cartoon that they watched as a kid, and they try to edit it all into one movie, so that they've got like a video of some dinosaurs being washed downstream in Land Before Time, and then they'll edit in like a clip of Ash, Misty, and Brock in the river getting washed downstream, and then they'll like edit in a bunch of clips of people getting washed downstream in various different cartoons, and they'll try to make it into a movie or something, or where it's like some really long, stupid crossover. And Daft and I found like there were hundreds of these things on YouTube, and it was like just kind of unbelievable that people had sunk so many hours into such a ridiculous thing, and that it hasn't gotten removed for copyright grounds is even more weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're using like a lot of different copyright holders' video footage, so maybe those things do get pulled.
Well, yeah, it's probably there's one YouTuber that did something similar, like just in a trolling way, like using multiple copyrighted things. Like, you have somebody who then tries to, like, copyright claim a video, but then somebody else tries to copyright claim, and, like, there's a deadlock because one tries to monetize and another tries to prevent monetization, and then the video just stays up.
Yeah.
So anyways,
I do feel bad for him because he's always getting, you know, inundated with these stupid messages from trolls, and like there was a month or two where he didn't post anything on Facebook, and he posted some Tumblr message saying like about how he apologizes, and you know, he just wants people to leave him alone, and you know, as a, you know, I guess we're basically the equivalent of what the inner circle is for Chris Chan, where we actually have the guy added on Facebook and communicate with him regularly and comment on his posts and feel like gatekeepers towards the new fags who've just found out about him and are, you know, sending him really stupid messages about unrelated videos. But still, I mean, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous that somebody actually tried to impersonate him on a website. And like, I didn't mind when on 789chan, if that's what it was called then, might have been 8chan or something else, but it was like the Lolcow board back when it was CWC, there was a friend of his that was on, on the thread, and he was like posting stuff that seemed credible. It was someone he knew in high school, and we did get some good information out of that. And it seemed accurate, like it was him talking to the computer, and
he was going around school, like, filming Asian girls.
Yeah, and asking the film club to fund Dexter's Odyssey was one of my favorite details from that. But he that one had some good info, but then, like, from what I can tell, all the threads since that one about Tim Bunks have just been shit, and there's so much misinformation in there, especially the part where they claim that Tim Box created the wiki about himself, which is just not accurate because we created the wiki about him. And I don't know why they claim that Timbox did it. They're taking the credit away from us.
Right.
I mean, the fact that the wiki is clearly tongue-in-cheek, I mean, maybe the trolls are so tone-deaf that they can't tell that it's, like, slightly sarcastic and is not actually...
Yeah, I mean, Timbox isn't that self-aware at all.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous that... And plus the title of the wiki should be a dead giveaway. What would you think if Timothy Robert Timbox McKenzie had his very own wiki? Like, that's an obvious pun on his, you know, the way he ends his posts back in the early days where he would say, what would you think if Dexter, Mimi, Lily, and the Powerpuff Girls went on an epic journey through a fantasy world inspired by James Cameron's Avatar? Or, you know, that sort of thing, you know, and I guess they haven't actually studied Timbox's posts enough to even recognize that as being, you know, a parody of a Timboxism, but he just seems to be seen as that autistic Dexter's Lab guy who likes 90s cartoons, but they don't, I bet a lot of the trolls don't even know about Dexter's Odyssey.
Yeah.
There have been times when he's, you know, when he said it, he's done with it, or he's afraid of copyright issues not allowing that to go forward, but he's posted so much about it that they really should have, you know, if they know anything about Timbox at all, that should be one of the things they know is Dexter's Odyssey. He's posted about it hundreds of times over the years.
Hmm.
There was, like, a point when he was trying to do an independent version of it, which was using, like, knockoffs of the characters. I think it's called Toon Talker.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's been abandoned, and he's back to Dexter's Odyssey again.
Yeah, that's usually how it ends up being. He briefly abandons Dexter's Odyssey, and then he returns to it within, like, a month or two.
Yeah, and occasionally he'll bring in a new Asian waifu to replace Lily. And I think originally in Dexter's Odyssey, the romantic interests were the Bath Girls from Ego Trip.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and he would always post that clip, and he would be like, this is the most erotic thing I've ever seen. This must have been really controversial when it aired on Cartoon Network. He had, like, a video about that on Daily Motion, I think. And then he moved on to Lily, and I think at one point it was the Sandal Girl from Samurai Jack, which is, like, some character who appears in one episode where Jack needs new shoes. And he was, like, really fixated on them for a while.
I mean, she's a more significant character than the Bath Girls, who appear in, like, literally one scene.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And there have been some other Asian girls that I don't think have been incorporated into it, but who he still posts a lot about.
Yeah, I think the most recent was Tomago from Big Hero 6.
Yeah, he was really into Gogo Tomago. And one of my favorites was the one where he posted about how she is haunting his dreams. Like, where he was posting about his wet dreams about Gogo Tamagawa. Like, he really does way too much info on his Facebook sometimes. There was also the snake from Kung Fu Panda. He liked that one because it had an Asian voice actress.
Yeah.
And there was probably another one too. I think that actually the snake one is what got him banned from Toon Zone, because he kept posting threads about how she was haunting his dreams. And I think they must have interpreted that as, you know, him having nocturnal emissions about this character, and they were like, this is not appropriate for a family friendly site. And And he kept spamming the board over and over, but can you please post pictures of Viper from Kung Fu Panda? And he was really into it for a time. He was also into Mulan about a year or two back, and made a bunch of posts about how fascinated he was with Mulan. And I think she might have been involved with Toon Talk or Dexter's Odyssey at one point.
Thanks.
Probably the most consistent characters in it are Dexter, Mandark in his cape, and the Powerpuff Girls tend to be in most iterations of it. Although he seems to, from what I can tell, he seems to hate the new Powerpuff Girls. He made some comment on his Tumblr about it, saying that it was a disgrace to the old one.
Oh, so he has seen stuff from recent Cartoon Network?
Yeah, he rarely posts about it, other than occasionally he rants about how it's gone downhill.
Remember when we tried to get him to watch Symbionic Titan?
Yeah, I don't know if that ever happened. He never told us if he did. It was pretty weird that he hadn't seen it, considering he's a huge Tartakovsky fan.
Yeah.
I think he still wants to work on the Samurai Jack movie with Tartakovsky, even though that's pretty obviously been abandoned now in favor of the new Toonami season.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ever commented on the Hotel Transylvania films. Do you know if he's seen
I think he did talk a bit about that. I don't know. I can't recall if he ever actually saw them, but I know he mentioned about them a few times.
Yeah, I mean, for the amount of times he's seen the sleepover episode of Dexter's Lab, you know, it's like he could be watching something new instead of obsessively looking at pictures of Lily in her pajamas. Probably the creepiest video he did was 34 seconds of unhealthy obsession.
Oh, that reminds me. I was just looking at the Timbox Wiki.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. The most recent edit was a comment from just an anonymous wiki contributor on the talk page for the 34 seconds of unhealthy obsession. The comment just reads, "You disgust me."
Yeah. I don't think the video is still up where he mentions masturbating to Mandark in the description, or at least he changed the description. Or maybe it was on a RetroJunk thread that got deleted, but I remember trying to find that a while back, and I couldn't find it, but I'm sure it's in the log somewhere, because that was something that we definitely thought was pretty weird when he said that.
Yeah.
I think he probably doesn't even understand the term. He seemed very confused about that sort of thing. Is there a page for the video where he goes to McDonald's and yells at his mom?
I don't remember. Which one was that? Was that one of the Teen's World videos? Or?
I think it might be part of the Tim Box movie, but
oh.
It might also be a part of A Saturday in the Life of Timothy Robert Tim Box McKenzie, or one of those side series. Because
yeah, I don't know.
There's one where he's, like, driving around, and then he, or being driven around, and then he gets to McDonald's, and he starts eating, and he yells at his mom. And that's, like, one of my favorite videos. That needs to have a page on there.
Yeah, probably should get back to editing that, because it's mostly just been one guy from the Kiwi Farms forum that's been editing pages.
Does he make new pages, or?
Yeah, he recently made a page called three really great movie sequels in cinematic history, in my opinion, which was, I guess, a video that Tim Roxett uploaded. He actually wrote out a transcript.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
When I made that wiki, I was not expecting anyone other than us to edit it. Maybe Daft, because he has the long video of Tim Box with dinosaur slides, which ends in like a bunch of information about the plot of Dexter's Odyssey, and it's like the worst mixture of colors you can imagine, where you can't even read what the text says because it's like light red text on a dark red background or something like that. And it's extremely blurry because of the low quality of Google Video.
Yeah.
I don't know if that one has been transcribed or not, because we might not have even been able to read it enough to be able to.
I mean, I could probably take a crack at transcribing that.
I mean, I know I tried to in the chat at the time when we first discovered it. And actually, we had known about it for a while, but no one actually bothered to watch the whole thing until, you know, I guess Emily must have been the craziest among us, because she actually watched the entire thing, and then she told Zaft about the part at the end with the Dexter's Lab, or Dexter's Odyssey slideshow stuff. And I think probably both of them have it downloaded on their computers, because
God knows why. That reminds me, I don't know if you... Well, have you been keeping up with JoJo?
No, I only saw the first episode of part 4. I need to get that up.
Okay. So there's this one character that is in love with one of the main characters, but like she's disturbingly so, and like does all this disturbing stalkerish stuff. And so when Daft saw the episode, he was like, "This character is pretty creepy, but this is mild compared to the stuff Emily."